tree trimming and cutting proposal that has been appealed. And do you have an anticipated date when we might expect that to go to the Planning Commission?
No, we don't. We're waiting for some information from PG&E. But the tree trimming removals are on hold until that gets aired at Planning Commission.
Okay. Thank you for that. And a quick shout-out to the Spencer's Farmers Markets on Thursdays. They've expanded their food court and offerings there. Many farmstead products are now available, including cheeses. More meats are available, and, of course, all the produce and vegetables and everything else that is normally there. I went through there last week for their opening of the food court area and was really impressed. And then, of course, we have our lighted boat parade on the 4th coming up, so looking forward to that.
Thank you. Good evening. Just some reminders. The JPA meeting will be on the 18th. It's a week later because of Veterans Day this week. And the 23rd and 24th, the tall ships will be in, so that'll be exciting. We're currently on state water shutdown. Everyone should have had a notice they received in their water bill and tentatively scheduled to go back online, I believe, the 21st. So I hope that everyone is using conservation measures. And lastly, the Salvation Army is in need of bell ringers. It's that time of year again, and they have locations all over Morro Bay. Please stop by the Salvation Army over by the Cookie Crock Market around the corner there and sign up. They're in need, individuals, families, organizations, anyone who can give some time to bell ring.
Okay, and staff reports. Chief Pond.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I think I'll make it real brief tonight. I have two reminders I want to put out to the public. One is we just changed our clocks back on Sunday, and I want to remind everybody that we like people to think about changing their batteries in the smoke detector whenever we spring forward or fall back. So once again, change those batteries in your smoke detector. The other thing is I want to remind people about distracted driving. We had another accident over the weekend, and you know, I just want people to keep in mind that when they're using cell phones or some other device, that they're not really paying attention to what's going on the road. So really be careful, follow the laws, and don't use your devices while driving. Thank you.
Thank you. Chief Olivas.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, Council. Thank you for this opportunity, and I just wanted to publicly thank you and Councilman Grantham for your years of public service and support. Thank you very much for the Thanksgiving endorsement on the Thanksgiving dinner that's put on by the Morro Bay Peace Officer Association and Rotary. And if you haven't heard the Quest Choir, they are a world-renowned. They travel to Europe, and so we have about 14 members of the 30-member choir coming, and they will be doing their performance between 1:30 and 2:30, an event not to be missed. In addition to that, I wanted to give a plug for Caroling Cop Cars, which is put on by our Neighborhood Watch, and that is going to be December 7th, 8th, and 9th from 5 till about 9 in the evening, where we take the trolley and escort it through every street in town and give out gifts. Santa gives out gifts to all the kids who come out, and it's kind of fun to see that. It's like we're into third generation putting this on, so we're seeing grandchildren of people who got toys from Santa through the trolley. So an outstanding event. Probably one of the most anticipated and fun-filled for the police department to put on for the community. A little update on our police department. We are in the process of hiring. We have one vacancy, officer position. We went through about 40 applications of laterals and academy graduates is all we're looking at right now. So we've narrowed that down to about 9, and we'll be testing for that about the second week in December. And unfortunately, a little bit of bad news. We in 2009, we put in for the COPS Hiring and Recovery Program grant, which would have funded a position for 3 years, fully funded a position. We didn't get that, but in 2010, they did put out a similar grant, federal grant, so we applied for that also. Unfortunately, we were not successful in obtaining that grant. If it's any consolation, no one in San Luis Obispo County was a recipient of that grant. And a little good news on that, we did get a grant from the Bulletproof Vest funding program, which funded us for about $3,000 through a grant process for replacement of our vests, which are mandated to be replaced every 5 years. And with that, I'd conclude my report. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Rick?
The $100,000 COP grant deal is a done deal, though, right?
Well, that's part of our agenda tonight, so it has to be approved by the council. And, yes, if it's approved by the council tonight, that will be funded.
Good.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, in closed session report, Rob?
Yes, good evening. Prior to the...
C1 has been pulled. Right. Okay, C1. So, to clarify, A5 has been moved to a public hearing. C1 has been pulled, and D2 has been pulled. Okay. Now, we will start with public comment. Please limit yourself to 3 minutes on items not on our public hearing agenda. Father Ed.
Mayor and Council, thank you. I just wanted to inform you that on the weekend, St. Timothy's Church has approved a renovation of our... Father Ed Halterhoff. That St. Timothy's Church... I didn't know that anyone didn't know who I was. But the St. Timothy's Church has approved a renovation program, and so I thought I would announce that to you and say that we're going to knock down the wall in front of St. Timothy's so that you realize that we are a very welcoming community. We're going to put two huge bathrooms in to accommodate men and women. There will be equal size for the men and the women, and there will be changing stations in both the men and the women's bathroom for babies, and a bigger gathering space. There will be doors and glass so that you can look in at us and we can look out at you. Blessing each other, as it were. We are therefore going to help make Morrow Bay beautiful, St. Timothy's Church. And also, Rarick Construction Company is going to be the contractor, so we're going to use a local contractor, and therefore St. Timothy's is also going to be doing a public works project here in Morrow Bay, providing jobs. We wanted the community to know that. We hope the community will want to help support that in every way. We are going to be having a concert this week with Rudolf Budgenis, who is a professor at Cuesta College. He's also our organist. He's going to play very classical and very unclassical music. So it is classical, untraditional, and entertaining. You have no idea what Rudolph will ever do. And so you may want to come. It's $25 per person. It helps support the renovation, but actually it will be a wonderful musical event. And so my tag buddy, Ken Vestervelt, will tell you more about that when he gets up. But I did want to inform you about this. So St. Timothy's will look more and more beautiful. So thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Deanna Kennedy, and I'm a resident of Morrow Bay. I would first like to start with a couple small announcements. One, I'll be forming a veterans group, and we're already working on that. It's going to be a support group as well as hand-holding, whatever you need, to walk you through the process to receive disability or any other benefits. They are now paying for PTSD all the way back through Vietnam. And a gentleman, I met with the VA rep the other day, and a gentleman was actually in there. And he was crying because he was so happy that they recognized this. So just be aware there's a lot of programs. Now, hopefully it'll start mid-December at the community center in... I don't know exactly what they call that room. Conference room? Lounge? Okay. So it'll be in the lounge. Also, up and coming, and there'll be more information, Morrow Bay Beautiful, we're going to do a membership drive, and we're also going to encourage families to come out and younger people because, you know, some of us are a little mature and move a little slower. Now, for my statement. Thank you, by the way. Thanks to all of you. And I'm going to read this so I don't go off on a tangent or get all emotional. Not that I've ever been accused of that. First, let me thank all of those who voted for me and all those who voted. I understand the extreme importance and value of the right to vote. Although I did not win, I know that I was blessed to have so many people believe in me. I also wish to thank most on City Council and staff for making themselves available to all candidates. You guys have been great, by the way. Thank you. I had planned to speak tonight on my thoughts of this particular local election and state my views. However, I have decided to say this. To our new mayor, although undecided this time, Morro Bay is a proud community, and we as residents hold ourselves to high standards. We require this also, not only of our mayor, but of our city council. As our new mayor and city council, our blessings will be with you. As long as you represent us as the residents and business owners and hold the positions with dignity, honor, and
integrity. Gray hair doesn't just get you in, because I know a lot of people that are 20 with gray hair. At the center, we have many, many activities. And you can pay your bills, your utilities, except for the Morro Bay Water and the AT&T bills there. If you're new in town, come and check out our facility at this community center. We have many, many, many games, bridge, pool table, just lots of stuff you need to come. Be a surprise. And thank you for the whoever it is that is making the trees and the landscaping. It's getting better. While in office, I started a Friendly Ride program, because I knew there's a Dial-A-Ride was going out July 1st, because I wanted to get more of my members who do not drive and faster to come eat and come to our general meetings. So I've been asked, why don't we buy a van? Or just find one, you know, or buy it, whatever we can. But we just cannot really afford a van. And we would like to get one for, the idea was for to offer an immediate ride when people call our office, which I initiated a Friendly Ride program. Volunteers can call and give their name, their phone number, what day or time they're available to come and pick up somebody. When a needy person calls and they need to get to a doctor real quick, they could call us and we give them the phone numbers of that particular person, or two or three numbers, however we have on our list. And we have done it about three times, I think, so far. So you could call 772-4421. That is the Morro Bay Seniors Office. And leave your name and address, not your address, but your phone number, and the day and time you're available to be able to help a needy person. And I just want to welcome our new council and mayor when it's all decided. You did a good job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, City Council members and Madam Mayor. My name is Michelle Hawkes. I manage the Best Western San Marcos Inn, the El Morro Masterpiece, and the Lostering Inn. I also sit as vice chair on the TBID. I'm here tonight basically to address item D1, which is funding from the TBID to the visitor center. I understand, I kind of wanted to come here to clarify a little bit. I understand we're just an advisory board. You can do as you may. But I wanted to be sure that you were fully educated on the discussion that the visitor center we had had. We'd had a discussion back on June 24th of this last year. I reviewed the staff report, and I noticed that the staff report did not have any mention of a few items that were addressed in our meeting, and so I wanted to come here to clarify, since I made the motion. I wanted to make sure that you guys were aware of what the motion actually had entailed, since I felt that was left out of the staff report. If any of you want to go back for further, June 24th special meeting, if you start at 1 hour and 29 minutes to save you an hour and a half of time, it will go into when the actual motion starts, and you can read through it. The motion that was made was to request the city not to increase TOT by 1%. Thank you. You guys did not do that. We also requested allow the TBID to return to the 3%. Thank you. That was done. In return, we would fund the visitor's center no more than 33% to be effective when the TBID went into increase, which was November 1st. We would also have financial oversight on the chamber board, who currently holds that contract with the visitor center. We would fund the San Luis Obispo Visitor Conference Bureau $24,477, and we would pay for AGP Video $6,000. We have already paid the SLO VCB, as well as we've already been paying for the AGP Video. We also, under that motion, encouraged the city to look into other restaurants, retailers, to possibly adopt a BID to incorporate in with our BID. Not that we wanted two separate BIDs, but that there would be kind of one big promotion entity in the city, which would incorporate not just the hoteliers, but restauranters, retailers, and any other businesses. So that was the full motion that was made on June 24th. Just to kind of remind you, there are other communities, and this is something the city should consider highly with these economic times. There's other communities where businesses, all businesses pay in, and then you have one big board that kind of helps fund promotions and marketing. I'd love to see that sometime down the future in many years to come when everybody else gets out of the bubble. But I'm basically here today to request that the TBID is, funds no more than the 33% for the visitor center, and that we have some type of financial oversight. It really concerns me that we would be putting in, it could be up to the tune of about $50,000, and we would have no financial oversight of that $50,000. And I understand it's...
Participate in the discussion, so I'd like to make some comments at this time. One is, we would like to have... let me start that over again. The Chamber's in the process of hiring a new CEO. We're having a board meeting on Wednesday to discuss that contract. I don't feel at liberty to disclose what's going on right now, but that's where we are. And with respect to the TBID and all those things, is we would really appreciate the time to get a new CEO on board, and we're also in the process of getting new board members, is to let the chamber sort of sort itself out before we get into discussion about what's going to happen to us. That would be really help. It would help us some, and that we would be able to have an intelligent discussion about what the alternatives are. With respect to representation on the chamber, with regard to, I know there's a suggestion that the city have a representative. One of the things that I think is really important with the chamber, and I've been emphasizing since I became president, is transparency and open communication. I think that some sort of representation would be helpful in terms of that communication. And I think that we should have some discussions about what that might look like before a decision gets made. I don't think it would help. It helps that goal to have a unilateral sort of something imposed upon us. Therefore, if you can let us take this under consideration and come back in 60 or 90 days, which will give us plenty of time to get sorted out, let our new CEO get his feet on the ground. I would think that would be beneficial for everybody involved. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Council. Ken Vesterbilt, resident of Morro Bay. Just a couple quick things. Concerning the Thanksgiving dinner, I know you mentioned that we had the bus. Even if you can't get the bus, give us a call, and we'll deliver the dinners to you. Second, congratulations to everyone, including in the primary, who ran in this city election. It's very, very important that if you think you can do it, you get out there and get your support. The citizens of Morro Bay voted to have the primary, and it works out great. It gives somebody an opportunity to do it. I want to follow up on Rudolph Budginnis. If you have a chance, RudolphBudGinnis.com, you'll see that he is a world-renowned pianist. He just finished up, back in January, finished up a tour of the United States and sold out to concerts there. And so it will be an awesome, usually at the PAC Center he sells out. Tickets start at $45 there. You have to drive down there. Here, there's no charge for parking at St. Timothy's, and the tickets are only $25, and it goes to a fundraiser for that. Third, for about two or three years, we have talked about a emergency vehicle antique car show, which includes police, fire, and we're going to include military. We have a tentative date of April the 16th, and we're having a meeting this week with the city to see if everything will go along with that. We're in partnership with the Morro Bay Police Department and the Morro Bay Fire Department, and so hopefully it's just going to be another date that will bring some visitors into town at that time. Third, if I have time, yes, I'd like to recognize I'm on the board of the Friends of the Morro Bay Fire Department, and one of our members, Barbara Riddell, has had some awful, terrible luck with her health this year. I think I can say that she had to have her ankle broken twice after it was broken once. She hasn't been able to make the meeting, so we wish her well, and she's welcome back any time that she can get there. Third, I was not on the bus.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Linda Winters, resident of Morro Bay. I'm here tonight to give you the fourth and final chapter of Proposition 21. And in my mind's eye, I had a jubilant speech prepared saying, yes, we passed it. But unfortunately, it did not make it in the polls. But I want to thank each and every one of the members of the Morro Bay City Council for endorsing this wonderful proposition. And what can I say about it? It was too little, too late. We all worked really hard on it. And hopefully, somewhere down the line, the people of California will see the light and know that our parks are well worth saving. I'd like to read just probably the best synopsis of what this proposition entailed. It was in the San Luis Tribune, and it was a postmortem for the election. And in this article, they said, the biggest disappointment, the defeat of Proposition 21. In that article, they spoke very highly of what makes the state parks run. There's only 3,300 paid employees in the state park system. There's 17,000 volunteers that help to keep it running. And I proudly say, I'm one of those volunteers. I've been doing this now for the past 12 years, and I like to work with school children. I like to get them while they're young. And one of the things I've always asked the children is if they know who owns the state parks, and they're always surprised to find out that they have part ownership of it. And one of the things I love, and if you'll give me one more moment, I love to see the wow factor on these children when a kid from the inner city of Fresno comes to Morro Bay and walks to the top of the hill and sees the ocean for the first time.
Okay.
Wow.
We need to wrap it up.
I know.
Okay.
But we're looking for volunteers. For those of you who are retiring,
thank
we
you.
Have openings for you
thank
in the
you.
State parks. Thank you.
Good evening, Council and Madam Mayor. My name is George Lee, a resident businessman in Morro Bay. I'm here to thank all the voters that turned out. It was a great turnout. And I want to thank those that have confidence in me to give me their vote. I appreciate it a lot. Anyway, I'll try my best not to let you down. But I also want to turn to you that are leaving the Council and say thank you very much for serving, and some of you will appear on other things. So whatever you do, good luck, and God bless you.
Thank you.
Let's see if that's right. Can you hear me?
Uh-huh.
Is that good? Okay. Good evening, Madam Mayor, Honorable Council. My name is Linda Hill. I'm a former director of regional criminal justice planning for this area. I'm currently on the board of the San Luis Obispo chapter of Americans for Safe Access. I wanted to let you know that SLO ASA has issued a press release, and I wanted to share it with you if I might. It will probably be just slightly abridged as I watch the light over there on the time clock. The San Luis Obispo chapter of Americans for Safe Access, which is the country's leading medical marijuana advocacy group, extends a huge thank you to the voters of Morro Bay who decidedly rejected the measure to permanently ban medical marijuana storefront collectives in their town. In its vote of 55% to 45%, a clear victory, Morro Bay has yet again shown its understanding, compassion, and advocacy for the medical use of marijuana by those who are compliant with our state law. Voters have renewed their support for patients to have safe access to a storefront facility which affords selection, helpful information from knowledgeable personnel, and convenience. The current Morro Bay City Council has established a subcommittee to develop an ordinance and guidelines regarding any storefront operation. The incoming mayor and council members have repeatedly stated the intent to, quote, let the voters decide, close quote, the storefront issue. Well, the voters have indeed decided, so we now request that the current and incoming mayor and city council members proceed without delay on finalizing the ordinance. To this end, we ask that your council set a date, hopefully tonight or at least ASAP, for the next subcommittee meeting. Americans for Safe Access thanks Morro Bay for being the shining beacon of hope for medical marijuana patients on the Central Coast. Our local ASA chapter and its like-minded supporters are eager to work with the city again to provide a safe and secure location for patients to obtain their needed medication. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello, Madam Mayor, City Council. My name is Rich Donald. I'm the chairman for San Luis Obispo Americans for Safe Access. I just wanted to thank you for your support and help at the subcommittee meeting regarding this issue. I know Mr. Spuckler and Mayor Peters and Mr. Schultz have all contributed quite a bit to that subcommittee. And to all the people who were involved in that so far, it does mean a great deal to us. So thank you again for your participation.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and Council.
The Morro Bay Visitor Center, and so I am going to zip through this because there's no way I can cover 11. It gives you our, in case you're wondering what our mission statement is, tourism is essential to the economic health and quality of life of this community. The mission of this committee is to increase tourism to Morro Bay through marketing and advertising. Then it goes through the fact that we made a subcommittee to study who had something to gain from tourism, and that would be all of these individuals, the TBID, the RV parks, vacation rentals, retail, restaurants, the city of Morro Bay, and the Harbor Department from bringing tourism in, even through boats. How was the $48,000 in retail and restaurant tourism sales determined? We go through that. But one of the important slides that I'd like to get to is this one here. What it shows is that when you take the sales tax for retail and restaurants and the TOT and you extrapolate them back to get the full amount of gross sales, you will see that hotels and motels are in green. We are responsible for about 24% of the funding of the visitor center. Retail is responsible for about 37%. Restaurants, 35%, and the RVVR is your RV parks and vacation rentals at about 3.7%. The TBID at the time of a June 24th special meeting made a presentation. We had a subcommittee that made a presentation, and we explained the 24%. There was a motion made and quite a lengthy discussion, and we came back and decided that based on our study and what we did, that we would go for this Morro Bay TBID recommendation to council. It would be that the TBID would return to 3% and that the council would not move to put a TOT increase on the ballot for the fall, which we just went through. So the TBID indeed went out, and there were zero negative declarations. That means that all of your hoteliers supported this recommendation by the TBID, which was that they allow it to return to 3%. Upon the 3%, the TBID would pay up to our full funding of 24% plus an additional 9%, a total of 33% funding for about $50,000 to $52,000 worth of funding for the Morro Bay Visitor Center. $6,000 for AGP videotaping, which we've already begun paying,
And in addition, we recommended that the city seek a 1% RV and vacation rental T-bid, and we recommended that the city look into seeking a restaurant and retail T-bid. In addition, we decided to pay the full fair share funding of $24,477 to the VCB. That's a total of $83,277, plus we give an additional $20,000 for fulfillment to our visitor center. And with that, what the T-bid was originally there, I'm closing, was that we asked for some oversight for our money that was being spent to the visitor center. We asked that you establish a board to do that, and I also left you with some great information of what we've done.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Taylor Newton. I'm a citizen, resident, and a business owner here in Morro Bay. First tonight, I wanted to talk briefly about St. Timothy's. I take care of the plants at St. Timothy's, and this whole fall, we have been renovating our landscape on the southeast end, next to the curve there, next to the fire station on Piney, I believe that is. We've trimmed up the trees and are planting a whole bunch of flowers on the interior and exterior. And you might have seen the corner of Piney and Kennedy, I believe it is, that we just trimmed up the trees there and laid out a bunch of mulch, getting ready for our renovation this fall, going along with the theme of opening up St. Timothy's, making it beautiful, really getting the town center, taking the opportunity to do the best we can with our location. And I wanted to thank St. Timothy's personally from the tree committee for letting us use their lot for the CLIP program that we helped with, the Civic Landscape Improvement Program. We're still using the lot for our bark mulch and compost, and they've been great helping out the city and citizens. That's pretty cool that they do that. The next thing I wanted to briefly talk about was city tree vote. If you don't know, right now we have a vote going on. It's not officially yet, but right now, I'm going to place it up here. You can see in your Bay News as of, let's see what time that was, October 21st they started it, and it goes till November 17th. You can, anybody that rec, as well as just citizens, and we're just trying to make our city as beautiful as we feel it is. And Lord knows we could all use help doing that. And I also want to thank Morro Bay Beautiful, who are really a big part of the tree committee as far as funding. And we're just a simple advisory committee, much like the bike committee. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Tom Lurie. I live in Morro Bay. First of all, I'd like to thank who's ever responsible for the warm water and the showers down at the Rock. I've been changing out of my wetsuit down there for 35 years, and it's really deluxe. So maybe that was one of the mayor candidates. I want to address item D1, and I urge you to postpone consideration of this, whatever you're going to do. For three reasons. Number one, you're lame duck council. That's no aspersions intended. Number two, the executive positions of the chamber have not been filled. And number three, the visitor center contract is with the city, but you're asking the lodging industry to fund up to 40% of its budget without any representation as a stakeholder. Note that staff's three options for approval amount to taxation without any representation for lodging. Clearly, there's no Tea Party soldiers on your staff. Since your power plant dreams vanished and since your property and sales tax revenue is in a nosedive, the TOT money you collect from the lodging industry is totally committed to the mere survival of your general fund departments, pensions, and benefits. You're tapped out, and now you want to pass off a major hunk of general fund visitor center funding to a new source of money coming exclusively to your lodging industry, the T-bid. You recall that the T-bid was created by the lodging industry for the lodging industry to promote Morro Bay in general and lodging in particular, because you gutted your promotion budget across the board. before you make any decision on who should fund the visitor center, I think you should consider how you would create and configure a completely new visitor center organization. If you started from scratch, who would run it and who would pay for it? Every city does it differently, and I urge you to take a look at that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. Richard Margetson. I came tonight to announce on December 11th the countywide needs and wishes fundraiser for the Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter. This is the fifth year this event has taken place in Los Osos at the Community Center. It'll be right after the Chamber of Commerce parade and will run from approximately 10 in the morning till 8 at night. A recent enumeration study identified 3,800 homeless in San Luis Obispo County. And of that number, 1,300 were identified as children. This year's event officially is now, based on the proceeds we raised last year, is officially now the largest single fundraiser in the county for the shelter. Last year we raised $45,501, and our goal every year has been to increase the proceeds by at least 10%, and we've met that goal all 4 years to this point. In the course of setting up this fundraiser, my co-founder Jerry Walsh and I, one of the purposes was not to just maintain the status quo over the years, but to change the situation. The Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter was built more than 20 years ago, was only supposed to be in existence for 2 years. It was seven trailers welded together that was supposed to be a stopgap at that point. 20 years later, the shelter's falling apart. There's plans. There's a piece of land available in San Luis next to the Department of Social Services. A new shelter will be built. 20% of the proceeds from this year's fundraiser will be set aside to help build the new shelter. And there will be a fundraising campaign that you'll hear about this upcoming year throughout the county. I've also asked that if you can't make the event but you'd like to donate, you can make a check to the Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter and send it to Box 6721, Los Osos, 93412. Please save your change. We have 5-gallon jugs that we ask people to bring their change and dump into. Jerry's going to talk about other things that happen at the event. If any
Operation Santa from the Cal Fire Department or Toys for Tots for the Marines. We have bins there, and every few hours they get filled up, and the Marines and Cal Fire come and empty them. So it does a lot of good for two different organizations then. And like Richard said, every penny that goes towards this event is from the event, goes towards the shelter. We have no overhead at all. Everyone is a volunteer. Everything is donated, from the use of the community center, the food, everything. We really thank the merchants and hotel people and restaurants and artists of Morro Bay, because they've always given really well in the past. And we have a need. You can donate items. We have bakery items for sale. We give away cookies, hot cocoa, coffee, if you want to donate and bake anything that day. We have fun things happening. We've got choirs. Colleen Walls Middle School and High School Chamber Choirs are singing. The Baywood Elementary School Choir is singing. We have dancers. Just everything going on all day long. And we have a craft fair in the back room. So if you sew, crochet, do sewing items, do Christmas decorations, ornaments, we can take those in too. And also, New Frontiers Food Store is moving from their old location to the old Circuit City building across from Home Depot, and it should happen November 13th. And on November 17th, they're going to take 5% of their proceeds that day and donate it towards our event, which will have matching funds. And last year, we raised over $1,700 from people shopping that day. So if you have any Thanksgiving shopping to do and want to go to New Frontiers and shop there, they really help us. And again, if you want to donate any items, you can call 528-5800. And if you want to make a checkout, P.O. Box 6721, Los Osos, and make it out to Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter. And it's just a really fun, fun event, so please come out for it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor. I say that for the last time. I want to thank all the voters in Morro Bay. We had a huge turnout again, and all of you have served as the voice of the people. You know, the people put you there. You've served as their voice for a long time. Those of you who are leaving, the people of Morro Bay and certainly myself owe you a gratitude for the work that you have done. We don't always agree on some things, but you've all given to the community and you've all spoken for the community, so I want to thank you all for that. On item D, one, the visitor center thing, my only recommendation there is if you do move in, I think you should put it off, but if you don't, I think that you should go for a seat on the executive committee or at least be participating in the executive committee decisions of the chamber. I've served on both the board of the chamber and the executive committee, and the executive committee, from my experience, is where the real decisions get made. And lastly, on the tree status thing, I think you've had an advisory committee. I think it's worked well. I don't think you need to make any changes there. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. We'll bring it back to the council. One question I had on choosing a tree, the frustration for me was I don't know anything about these trees. It's just the name. Is there a place that you can go to find out what the tree is?
Yes, we a couple members of the tree committee that have really great experience with the different varieties of trees have put together a list that basically outlines some of the key details about each species, and that is available with our tree voting packet, which is available here at the back of the room tonight, thanks to Mr. Newton. And we have also available at City Hall,
okay,
at the front desk. We've brought it out to a couple of the Saturday farmers markets and are going to continue to do that and also get out to a Thursday market. And we're working on getting out to other community organizations like the Historical Society and the Business Forum that we think will be interested in voting. The Bay News voting period ends this week. Neil has said that he'll accept ballots through next week, the mail-in ballots, but we're going to continue to collect votes through the end of the year.
If he's going to run that ad again, maybe he could just say that information's available at City Hall.
He is. Actually,
okay.
This week is the last one, so he's going to summarize that.
Okay.
The drawing for the dinner is going to be for the mail-in ballots. That was their request. And the official tree, that the process that we see coming forward for actually adopting that tree is we're going to tally the votes, summarize the voter, get out the vote process, and then submit it to the council for final approval and resolution. And that tree is very much like the dahlia, as Mr. Newton said. It's not the tree that's selected. It doesn't mean that that's what we're going to plant.
Okay. Has anybody seen Betty?
Yeah.
She out there?
Yeah. Our AGP guy and his wife had the twins.
Yeah, Zeke.
Cool. Okay. Has anyone seen Betty? Well, we're gonna start. So go ahead. I don't know where she went. All right. We're gonna come back with item B1, our first public hearing. Resolution authorizing submission of a rural transit fund grant application. Janine?
Thank you and good evening. Tonight it's that time again in the fiscal year for the Rural Transit Fund grant applications. This is an annual grant cycle for transportation projects, and the City of Morro Bay, as well as RTA for Runabout and the county for their unincorporated area services, are the only agencies eligible for these funds. This year, there's about $520,000 available for allocation. Applications are due on December 3rd, and a resolution from the council is needed for any projects that the city is wishing to submit. Tonight, you have two projects listed, and the Council of Governments requests that if there are multiple submissions of applications, to rank those in a priority order in case there's usually there's more applications submitted than there are funding available, and that helps them with ranking what's important to the community and trying to get that funding. Tonight we have two projects available, the first of which, and that's listed as the first priority, is operating assistance for Morro Bay Transit Project. This would be a request for $15,000, and it's kind of based on a couple of things. One, due to the state decreases in Transportation Development Act over the last 3 years and the slow pace of recovery of the economy, it's uncertain whether our TDA allocation for next fiscal year will remain the same, or if the economy has not recovered enough, whether that will be lower. So what staff wanted to do was to put in an application for some operating assistance should our TDA allocation be lower than what we are currently receiving for this fiscal year. The other part was in relation to fares, and the data that we have at this point was only for 3 months from the start of the new service, and this was at a time when about 2.5 of those months was during the summer when school was not in session. So that may have had an impact to the percentage of the ridership categories. And the Colloride trips right now for those first 3 months have been lower than what was anticipated and estimated for developing fares for this fiscal year. And again, that's 3 months of service data that's available. People are still getting used to the transition to the new service. They were getting used to learning about the new service and how to access it. So we won't really know for probably through the end of this first year how the ridership categories would break out. But staff wanted to just put this in as a kind of a placeholder in case either the TDA or the fare differences stayed this way. The second project that is being requested for submission is bus stop information display cases for the trolley stops. Currently, the display cases that we have are very narrow and don't accommodate the route map, and they're very old and very tired. There's a lot of chip paint, and so we have a request in for purchasing new cases for each stop. This was also an item that was on the North Coast Transit Plan recommendation list to upgrade the display cases to accommodate the route map. So this would be in compliance with one of those recommendations. There's a resolution that's attached for consideration and adoption with regard to fiscal impact. Total costs for the projects from the RTF are $33,500, of which $31,208 is being requested from the RTF grant. They're for capital projects, so I was basing it more on if we continued to have the fare structure be what it is for these first 3 months of service, and what that difference from what was budgeted, what was estimated for the budget.
I guess one of the main complaints I've heard is that it costs so much to do a dial-up or to call up and get that it's increased so much that people aren't using it for that reason. And to help subsidize that, I think, would have been worthy. So I was surprised that it was a small amount.
Any other questions? Okay, this is a public hearing. Anyone wishing to speak on this issue, please step forward. And seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council. Okay, comments? Noah, you want to start?
Sure. Well, I definitely agree that the two priorities that you've laid out here are important for us. I'm disappointed that there wasn't some mention, or I guess I'm questioning why there wasn't some mention of supporting the community bus concept, or at least establishing that further as a fallback option for people that aren't able to access what we're offering through our public transit. And I guess I'm bringing that up because I know as a council we've made a motion directing to actually investigate that further and develop that concept as much as possible. The seniors are moving forward with the Friendly Ride program, which seems like a very nice, modest step. And I just want to make sure that we are following through with our request from the council side to support them to incubate that effort that they're moving forward with. And I'm finding myself wondering why we don't have some element of that in this request as an option for a third option for us.
My understanding from the requirements of the RTF for eligible projects, the operating assistance is for the existing city services, and the community volunteer bus pilot project is not a city service at this time. If the council at some point during the next budget cycle were to allocate funds to it and the senior center or some other group takes that pilot project on, we may be able to in the future look to this grant for some additional funding.
I figured that's why it wasn't included here, but I guess I'm finding that concept just really hasn't received any attention, and yet it's something that we've identified as being very important. And I don't want that to fall off of our radar, and make sure that we proceed and support that as much as we can.
Carla? Rick?
Yeah, thank you. I support this. I don't want to see we have Measure Q as a possible funding source here. I don't think that's an appropriate source, and we have a balanced budget with no extra money in there in the general fund, so I would encourage the parking in lieu, I think, unless there is sufficient funds in an accumulation fund, but certainly not Measure Q.
Okay. Eddie?
I would concur not to use Measure Q, but if there is money in the accumulation fund to use for that. I think I've already made my comment, and that's it.
Okay. Well, and I'm in agreement, too. It should not come out of Measure Q. So, all right. So, someone make a motion?
Move to approve B1.
Second.
Any further discussion?
Do you want direction in that from the funding source included in the motion?
Do we need to specify that in the motion, that it should not come from Measure Q?
Or where it should come from?
Rob, do we need to specify where that funding comes from at this point?
I would look to Susan Slayton to tell you whether she needs to know where that funding would come from.
Okay. Susan?
Good evening. Yes, I would need to know where it's coming from so that I can make sure that the money gets transferred from the appropriate spot.
Okay. Well, it sounded like accumulation fund over here. Okay, you want to add that to the motion then?
Rick made the motion.
Well, I'd like to know, I guess, the balance of the accumulation fund and the balance of the parking in lieu.
Unfortunately, I don't have that information. I can tell you that the accumulation fund added money this year because we've only taken $400,000 out of it instead of $500,000, and we had already met our 27.5% goal. We had about we already had $120,000 extra in there at the end of that was planned.
That's fine.
So we do have some.
Thank you. I would move that we take it from the accumulation fund then.
And I would second that addition.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. All right. And item B2, this is consideration of award for request for proposals.
And there were two proposals that were submitted by the due date. Proposals were received from the current contractor, MV Transportation, and one from San Luis Obispo Regional Transit Authority, or the RTA. As I mentioned, the new contract would begin January 1 and would be for a three-year period of time with the possibility of 5 one-year extensions. It should also be noted that there is a provision in the agreement and was in the RFP specifications relating to the transit efficiencies group that the city has been participating in over the last year or so, working with the Council of Governments and RTA on potential consolidation or coordination concept for the North Coast area for Morro Bay and Los Osos. And at the time, just before the budgets were starting to be developed, there was a proposed concept for a fixed route between the two communities with 2 days of dial-a-ride in Morro Bay and 2 days of dial-a-ride in Los Osos, and 1 day that was shared amongst the two that was being put forward. But there were a number of deficiencies in the routing that would not be acceptable to the city. And because of the time frame, we wouldn't be able to work out or see if there was any potential to work out those deficiencies in a period of time that we would be able to implement something by July 1 when the new budget took place. So we did put a provision in the agreement that should we continue with the transit efficiencies group participation and something does come to the council with a proposed concept to implement in the future during the term of the agreement, that the agreement could be terminated so that we can the council can move forward with the new transit option. I just wanted to mention that because it's not here in the staff report, but it was something that did come up recently, questions from the RTA staff as well as the COG staff. A three-member evaluation committee was comprised of one of our Public Works Advisory Board members, a local transit manager from the city of Atascadero, and staff from the Public Services Department. And the evaluation committee reviewed the two proposals in relation to the RFP requirements. The committee rated each of these proposals using the criteria outlined in the RFP specifications, which is available on the city's website on the transit page, as well as the two proposals are also available online for review. The evaluation committee rated each proposal using the criteria, and out of a possible 100 points, scored MV on an average of 91, and RTA scored an average of 60. I'm not going to go into detail of all the technical, organizational, or financial information that was provided and required and evaluated. Low scoring for RTA was due to insufficient information that was provided in the proposal, and the evaluation committee felt like it couldn't conduct a real full, complete evaluation of the technical portion of it and some of the cost proposal because there wasn't adequate information and a lot of missing pieces. In addition, RTA's cost proposal would require the use of more than 100% of the city's TDA allocated for Morro Bay Transit. And this is before you include fuel, maintenance, utilities, the auditor, marketing, and city overhead. The cost proposal was more than the city could afford with the current TDA allocation that we receive. In the past, interviews had been held when scoring between the top two or three contractors were the same or were within a few points of each other, or if the cost being proposed by those individual businesses was very close. The evaluation committee felt that neither of these instances occurred during the scoring and evaluation of the two proposals from MV and RTA, and therefore did not feel that it was necessary to conduct interviews. The evaluation committee recommended that the city award the contract to MV Transportation, and the Public Works Advisory Board meeting at their October 27th meeting considered the evaluation committee's recommendation as well as the RFP and proposals and concurred with the evaluation committee's recommendation. With regard to cost, on page 5, you will find the proposal certification form that listed for Morro Bay Transit and for trolley, the monthly management fixed fee as well as the vehicle service hour fee, which is basically your driver cost, and what that would be between Morro Bay Transit trolley for MV and RTA. RTA did not submit the required cost proposal forms, but they did submit a cost proposal in the form of one lump sum annual cost for both types of services combined. And so at the bottom of page 5, you see that salaries, driver wages, and all of that. What I would like to note that is when you're comparing the cost proposal for the driver salary and benefits between RTA and MV's proposals, 50% of the total cost proposal for MV goes to driver wages and benefits, while RTA's total cost for their proposal, 39% goes to driver wages and benefits. And when looking at the management team labor support percentage of the total cost proposal, for MV that's 26%, and for RTA it's 49% of the total cost proposal. Let's see. Another item that wasn't submitted from RTA related to the wage scale and classification, full-time equivalents. So we don't have an idea of how many drivers would be hired, whether they would be part-time, full-time equivalent, or what percentage, as well as the different management classifications. There is a list for a dispatcher, but there's no full-time equivalent provided, so and no other detail provided on how dispatching would occur, so it's unclear whether it would be for the 2 hours that was listed in the RFP and agreement and what we currently do, or whether it would be for the full day of service because their dispatching is in operation for the full day. The difference in cost between RTA and MV's proposal over 3 years is more than $159,000. As I've already mentioned, the TDA with RTA's cost proposal, it would be more than the city has allocated to it at this time, whereas with MV's cost proposal, it would actually use less of the TDA allocated for this current fiscal year. MV's proposal is 7% less than what the city currently pays, and RTA's cost proposal is about 24% more than what the city currently pays. As I mentioned, the Public Works Advisory Board and the Evaluation Committee, the Public Works Advisory Board concurs with the Evaluation Committee's recommendation to have the City Council consider the cost or the proposals from MV and RTA and to award the RFP to MV Transportation. Just want to go back quickly to the fiscal impact. With award to MV Transportation, there would be no additional cost for TDA, there would be actually a slight reduction. And with regard to the trolley, there would be no increase to the amount of general fund or parking in lieu that would be needed for that service. So with that, what I'd like to do is turn it back over to the council for opening it up to public comment for the public hearing and answer any questions or comments from the council.
Okay. I want to add something to this, serving on this LOCOG and the RTA. I was one of the ones, the minority, who voted against taking the driver contract in-house at the RTA. And I think that I've been justified because they did have a very difficult labor negotiation, the drivers that they ended up with the union, and were very difficult. They wanted the moon. They didn't get it, but it wasn't pleasant. And so I just wanted to add that to this discussion, that the cost, that the potential costs with RTA are much higher. It's sort of like the fire department, where, you know, CDF are keeping it local, sheriff are keeping it local, keeping our own control, we can control these costs. And that's one of the reasons that I would just say add that to your consideration. Questions, Rick?
Hi, Janine. I was just taken a little aback by the percentage that RTD has for management. Is that because they have more management people that we'd be paying that wouldn't directly maybe be supervising our Go ahead.
Unfortunately, that's not really clear. In the RFP proposal, they listed the name and title for management, and there is a line item cost, but there was no full-time equivalent provided or description of the different types of jobs and duties. An example would be the road supervisor. It mentions there'd be a road supervisor for the North Coast. Now, does the North Coast mean just Morro Bay or Morro Bay, Los Osos, Cambria? And that is unclear because that information wasn't in the RFP. But when you look at the cost on the line item for road supervision, it was $55,000. So you don't know whether that is for solely for the Morro Bay contract or a percentage of or a total amount for multiple jurisdictions.
And also, what's the contract situation like with the drivers and management? When does that come up again? How long are these fixed?
But between the drivers and the contract, another 100. 110, 115,000 on top of that, bringing the cost for operations for Morro Bay Transit to over 300,000. So with the TDA allocation of 203, we would have more costs for operations than we do have TDA funds available for it.
So to clarify, you're saying that we would have to pull out $100,000 from the general fund to cover this if we had went with the RTA? For the cost that you just identified.
The council would have to consider alternative funding sources than TDA.
And you're saying that money is not coming, we don't have to pay that if we go with MV?
MV's cost proposal for is about 150, where was it, 100? It's on that first page, 108. Almost $109,000, and then once you added in all those, the fuel, the maintenance, the city overhead and whatnot, I think it brought it up to about $230,000, $225,000.
And so we'll still have to find some money to cover that?
And that's typically your fares.
Okay. And how much are fares usually?
Fares in the budget were estimated at about $33,000-$35,000 for this year. As was mentioned in the previous staff report for the RTF grants, with the first 3 months of service, it's estimated that fares would be coming in about half that. Mm-hmm. But it's again, that's with 3 months, and most of that was school year, so we don't know as people
right.
are getting used
Got
to
that.
The new service and whatnot, how that may change and how much we might get closer to what the estimate was.
My other two questions have to do with process, and I'm not sure if they're for you or for the mayor, either one. This transit efficiency group mm-hmm. Study that both of you have served on, how is it that that didn't come to our attention when we were first talking about this?
Well, it's been a very slow-moving thing, the glacial speed of government, getting everybody together for the meetings and everything. But we did have a couple of meetings. Unfortunately, the RTA proposal is a benefit to RTA. It's not a benefit to Morro Bay. They were not including the routes that we needed. They were totally ignoring North Morro Bay. And we just said that wasn't acceptable. And they have not come up with any way to provide for that part of the route without costing more money. So it just hasn't worked out yet. They want to still work on it, and that's fine, and we're willing to keep working on it. But up to this point, they've not responded to what we need to satisfy our customers.
And I'm sorry. I was going to say it should be noted that periodically we had provided updates either through email or memos or as part of other staff reports for other items related to transit about the transit efficiencies group and what was going on. When we got this last proposed concept, we didn't want to bring something to the council that we knew was not going to be workable. We wanted to bring something to council for consideration that we knew was going to be at least workable for the community, and the cost was going to be right, and then bring it to the council for consideration whether to follow that path or to continue along the path that we were moving in for the new fiscal year. So it's not a dead issue. It's something that timing-wise wasn't working with when our fiscal year budget was going to have to happen and the cuts to the TDA were going to occur. And the timing, I think that meeting was in April, so within 2 months there was no way to be able to get something to fix the deficiencies, if possible, within the concept, bring something to the council for consideration, and if the council approved moving in that direction, to be able to have a period of time to do startup for it. So,
and to add to that, too, we did invite the RTA people to be at that meeting where we had the citizens come and talk about the service, and they declined to attend. And they, I personally invited them, so they didn't extend that much interest in providing what our citizens need. So this was addressed at the RTA meeting Wednesday, and we said that this clause would be there, that if we can come up with a proposal that will work and service our citizens the way we need, then the contract could be broken for that reason. But so far, the advantage is all to RTA and not to the citizens of Morro Bay, and so that's why we've kind of let it go.
And my last question then is about keeping SLOCOG in the loop about this. They seem surprised that we went out for the RFP, and so what kind of communication have we had with them or not?
I announced it at the meeting at the RTA. We've been talking about it. They've been in touch. They just haven't done anything to change.
Not,
they
not,
keep saying, you know, yes, we want to do this, but they don't come forward with anything that provides for our citizens.
I don't mean the RTA. I mean the SLOCOG.
Okay. Well, the members of the committee are on SLOCOG. So.
I think it probably would be more from staff.
I think there was a misunderstanding between COG and...
Okay, any other questions?
No? I do. A couple of questions. One about the clause that you've mentioned. Is that, as been suggested, the $180 or 180-day exit option that we have? So in the case that this Estero plan is, as we are planning on continuing to stay in contact with them, developed and satisfactory, we have that ability?
Correct.
And there's not a penalty within that clause?
No.
Okay. The other question I have is, I didn't see anything in here about office location as part of the numbers, and was wondering how that interacts with the discussion that we've had about considering the community center as a potential option. Would if we made a move like that, would that significantly change the numbers here, or have an impact with the contract?
The office location is part of the cost is within the citywide overhead for building maintenance, and if I remember correctly in the cost allocation, it's a small number. It's a couple $2,000 or $3,000 a year. You would also have, if you're moving to another location, depending on whether utilities are paid for or where it's paying a percentage of, there might be some cost difference there, but the amount would be relatively small.
Okay. And in regards to calls and dispatch, you know, we're talking about finding ways to increase the hours of opportunity for people to call in and set up a ride, a direct ride. And, you know, if we move forward with a partnership with the senior center, as an example, how would you see that affecting this contract, if at all?
Well, it would depend on the nature of what kind of relationship gets fleshed out with the Senior Center for Community Volunteer Program. The Community Volunteer Program should be separate, but as far as for dispatching for the call-a-ride services, that would be under the purview of this agreement. Whether that changes from 2 hours to 3 hours would really kind of be, more of a negotiation point, and whether the current project manager would be able to have enough time within the day to do that and still do the other duties of project management, road supervision, training, and the occasional occasional driving.
Okay. That's all my questions for now.
Okay. Carla, anything?
If so this is the proposed contract is based on the level of services now, so is there room for any adjustment if we determine, because we've had a discussion in the past and we haven't evaluated the trolley services yet this year, so if we were to decrease trolley services, is that going to have a change in the administration fee, or is it going to stay set at the same price?
There is a provision in the agreement that the city can, that basically the levels of service under the scope of the RFP are all subject to funding availability. So if there are changes to the trolley contract or the trolley portion for service hours, if you're cutting a route going back to two, if you're shortening days, that kind of thing, that's all built within the current provisions. So there wouldn't be a change in that unless both the city and the contractor agreed to open up a renegotiation for that particular part, and that there are provisions within the contract for that.
And then the recommendation was for a three-year contract, even though we're unclear what the future fiscal situation is going to be. What is the reason for extending 5 1-year contracts, and what's the purpose of it?
It's an industry standard. The council could set a one-year extension. The council could say at the end of 3 years, we would like you to go out to bid again. The council could say at the end of three or towards the end of 3 years, we've been happy with the services. It's not looking like CPI is going to jump really high. You may have 2-3% increase versus potentially going out for bid and coming back with a much higher cost than what the CPI adjustment would be, and there would be staff time and money involved with that process. So it just leaves flexibility for the council. It's not a requirement just because you have those 3 5-year extensions to actually do it, but it gives the council flexibility depending on what's happening in 2.5 years from now.
And last question right now. Could you tell me who the city staff member and PWEB member were on the...
I was the city staff member. The Public Works Advisory Board member was Bill Olson, and the person, the manager from the city of Atascadero was Valerie Humphrey.
Thank you.
Okay. Any questions?
Are we currently advertising our dial-a-ride system on our city website?
The Morbay Transit services are on the city website, both that and the trolley.
Okay. This is a public
MV Transportation. We hope to have your vote of confidence to allowing us to be your service provider going forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor Peters, City Council, staff, and citizens of Morro Bay. I'm Susan Brown, General Manager for MV Transportation. MV is the contractor with... that operates Morro Bay Transit for the city of Morro Bay. MV Transportation has been great for me. I've worked for 5 transit operators here. I've been with Morro Bay Dial-A-Ride to start and now Morro Bay Transit since 1989. So I've been through a few contractors, and I've been happiest with MV Transportation. They've given me a lot of training opportunities. They've trained me up, you know, and taught me a lot of things. I really enjoyed working with Janine, also Ms. Burlingame at the city, and we've established a really good working relationship since I've been manager since 2005. Transit, just to talk about it for a sec, it's a people business, and I feel like by doing what we do, we're serving, we're in this public service and serving people, and like a community service. We get to help people get out of their houses and get to where they're going. And we've said it in the past, we do it without being paid, but thank goodness we do get paid to do this. So it's like working at what we love to do. And I'm speaking for my team. The center of all this is the drivers, and they're just number one. MV treats drivers really well. The owner of the company started as a driver, and they just took us to Phoenix. I was able to take one of our drivers, Camille, to the general manager's annual meeting in Phoenix, and we got to hear the owner speak. And it's really good to see how they, I just love the way they operate. They are operated as a family business, and they intend to stay that way. And I just appreciate how they've taken such an interest in this small division, the smallest, I'd say, probably, of the company, which is countrywide, and, you know, even sent people to be very helpful to me. They'll send people in a minute to help us here in Morro Bay. So I just, you know, want you to know that I'm committed to keeping this going, and as this grows, and it has grown, Morro Bay Transit has grown already, that I'm just here to serve the people of Morro Bay and to continue doing it, whatever the future brings. One example today, I don't know why, as a Monday, because it isn't usually our biggest day, but we did have our biggest day today. And the call-a-ride service for the morning, I was going to have to start asking people to set up for the afternoon. And they're calling the day before, so these calls were set up Friday. So it's really doing well, if anyone wanted a report on how is the Morro Bay Transit service running, and we're really pleased with it so far. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back to council. Comments? Who wants to start? Rick?
Well, I'd just like to take the opportunity to thank Susan, Janine, the reps from MV for the service that you provide to the citizens that have no other way to get around and depend on that service so much. And I also want to compliment your drivers for being so efficient, so friendly, so helpful to the people that need that. So, you know, we hear a lot of complaints. I don't hear a lot of complaints about MV or any of the drivers. As a matter of fact, they're even volunteering on Thanksgiving. That's kind of giving people that they are. So thank you again for all you do. Appreciate it. You got a good crew.
And how do you feel about the issue?
Pardon me?
and you're approving the the contract.
Yeah,
okay.
I was going to wait for the comments.
Okay.
If there are no other comments, I would move approval of B2.
Oh, there's some comments.
Yeah, I'm sure there's comments. Okay. All right, Betty.
I've heard good things about MV for the number of years that they've been here. The complaint mainly seems to be about the cost that we've increased it to. The fact that we don't have enough time to call in is the second complaint that I hear. I'm not sure how to adjust for that. It seems to be a little bit inflexible at this point that we are doing the way we are doing it. And I'm hoping that future council will make this a little bit more of a high priority in next budgets. I'm a little disappointed in the process, I guess I have to say. If there were a number of questions by the competing company, that maybe interviews should have happened. But I think that where we are...
We have that as part of our motion tonight, that we stay engaged with the Transit Efficiencies Group and work with them to see what we can do to develop a plan that could give us better value, because that's the ultimate decision we have to make, is what's going to provide the best service at the most affordable price to our community. And if it turns out that's something other than our existing contract, then we have to go that route and do our best to develop that plan. I also hope that we will have... include in our motion an effort to work with alternative groups such as the Senior Center, as we have in other motions in the past, that basically encourage their participation to aid our existing program. And that would mean in the extension of the call opportunity and call time that we have available to people to set up rides, and also potentially helping to promote, if they do have a friendly ride program, as they do promote that through this program, just as an alternative option for people that are having challenges with our existing service. So those are some key elements that I think are very important for us to include in our motion tonight, so we're clear moving forward.
Carter?
Well, I will echo everyone else's comments in regards to the level of service. And also, Ms. Wenholtz, I share in the disappointment of the process. We headed down this path back in April, and NOAA has a copy of the motion that was made and voted on 5-0 to look at alternative sources for a community ride concept. And here we are 7 months later, and no action's been taken towards it. And we're getting this contract proposal 7 weeks before it expires, even though we discussed this 7 months ago. So the process, I'm really disappointed in. I would hope that in granting this contract to MV that we consider the timeline, not knowing how the fiscal
years ahead of us are going to lie, and I'd be a little concerned about 3 years extended out. I appreciate that there is an opt-out clause of 180 days, and I suppose that would cover us. But I am very concerned about extending it out 3 years, not knowing where we're going to be at fiscally.
Well, I think we are following our previous motion in that, you know, the senior center is looking at a community bus service. We knew that we couldn't afford to provide it, although we allocated some money to do some investigation and research on it. So I think that is, given the lack of volunteers, the lack of a vehicle, all of that, it's there. It's not being so much ignored. It's just not financed, and that's certainly an issue. As far as this particular contract, I think that the response, obviously, was from MV. Certainly they have been working here and have been working well, and I echo the praise also for the service to this community. I really do appreciate it. I appreciated your service to RTA as well. I think that as far as the efficiency, pursuing that through SLOCOG, I'm sure that will continue. But again, it's a tough thing to do because there's only so much money, and we're using our money to the best of our ability in Morro Bay. When you combine it with RTA's routes, then they want to split that money over the whole region, and somehow it doesn't always balance out to our favor. I hope that ultimately it will, and I'm sure we'll keep working on it. But I think the process here was a good one, and I will now. You want to restate your motion, Rick?
If no one would like to add caveats to it, I'll withdraw mine and let him go ahead.
Okay. So I move that the City Council award request for proposal number MV10-T1 to MV Transportation, that we direct staff to continue engagement in the Transit Efficiencies Group, evaluating and developing the concept of the Estero Subregional Transit Plan, and that we further develop our support and partnership of alternative community transit opportunities such as the Friendly Ride program and the potential to share a calling support center with the seniors citizen group.
Okay. I'll second that if you would add in there that we would have the contract for 3 years and maybe 1 year option further, but I don't want to go beyond 1 year.
I will accept that.
I second the motion then. Okay, Bridget, have you got that? Okay.
Actually, before I accept that, can I make sure that wouldn't directly change any of the numbers in this negotiated contract here?
No.
The authorized the termination of that 1982 agreement. What that meant was that the city no longer has the use of Well 9A. And at the same token, Roanoke has been paying for water service since that time. The reason why this was all necessary is because, as you're very aware, we've had some challenges in the Chorro Valley with water quality and other changes with the regulations, the water quality having to do with nitrate issues. And it's been very difficult for us to be able to maintain our groundwater resources out there and at the same time provide water to the 11 customers out there. In order to do both, especially during this time we're at right now with state water shutdowns, to do both, one of the options that we discussed way back at the beginning of the year was to major modifications and provide another pipeline out there, which was an alternative we didn't want to look at. And so you've had us working on a path of trying to negotiate with the 11 customers out there on trying to find a way that they could provide their own water services since they're not within the city's jurisdiction. And what we have in front of you tonight is the first agreement that we've been able to reach with one of the property owners, and that is Roanoke of God. And what that would basically do, this agreement is we would they would cease being on city water services, and in exchange what we're providing them is a well. We will install a well for them to use, and we will also install an RO system. The cost of that is about $15,000. In exchange, once again, they'll no longer be on water services, And hopefully this will be the start of reaching other agreements with the other property owners that are outside of our jurisdiction so that, that we they will no longer rely on city water services. And with that, I'll open up for any questions.
Okay, questions?
I have one. Penny? Have they been, since they've been paying their water bills, have they been prompt with their payments?
I haven't heard otherwise, so I assume they are.
Okay. Has their usage dropped?
I don't know that we've checked that. So I would assume so because they've been irrigating using well 9A.
Mm-hmm.
And so their usage that for the last few months has been just an interior indoor usage. So I would assume it's dropped significantly.
Okay, any other questions? All right, this is a public hearing. Anyone wishing to speak on this item, please come forward. And seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council. Comments? Betty?
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
Move approval of B3.
Second.
Discussion?
I'll just make one comment because I'm going to vote no on this. And it's basically because of the last whereas under the recitals. I'm uncomfortable with the nebulous term historical water use. And I understand the reasoning why the city attorney used that language, but I'm going to respectfully disagree that I think we're leaving it open too wide.
Okay. Any other comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
4-1, Winholtz opposed. Okay, and our next public hearing item is item A5, which is a resolution accepting a $100,000 grant from the State of California Citizens Option for Public Safety, COPS program. And this, Chief Olivas.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and Council. We're very fortunate again to have this opportunity to receive the State COPS grant, which is also known as the State Law Enforcement Supplemental Fund. This year, the grant funds were once again tied to the state vehicle license fee, or the VLF fund, which has really provided some stability within our current unstable state budget system. Because of this, it's anticipated we will receive the full funded amount of $100,000. Unfortunately, there's a sunset clause within the grant which removes it from the VLF fund in June 2011. And that could result in going back into the general fund and have a difficulty of receiving that grant in the future. Legislation requires the police chief prepare a report for council at this public hearing on how the funds are proposed to be spent, and that is what is before you here tonight. I've solicited input from department staff to prioritize how we can best utilize the COPS grant funding this year to benefit our frontline law enforcement. As part of the budget reductions this year, the police department was forced to reduce all of our part-time help. That included our crime prevention coordinator as well as our property evidence technician. Both of these positions have significant value to both the department as well as the community. However, the property evidence technician provides a very critical function to our department that allows us to continue providing basic law enforcement functions. Morro Bay Police Department collects a surprising amount of evidence each year, and the loss of this position would create potential for proper mismanagement of evidence. Property could increase significantly due to time restraints placed on existing personnel who would have to absorb those duties. It would be very difficult to maintain consistency and accountability of evidence for the property that this property evidence technician provides. We would also open ourselves up to the potential for liability concern.
Us back in the budget to have this position reinstated?
Well, my first hopes would be that it will be funded also into the next year. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is potential that I could bring it forward as a budget proposal for the next year to further fund the position because of its value to the department.
Thank you.
Rick?
Was there any talk or discussion about using some of these funds towards the County Narcotics Task Force, or are there just too many other priorities that are pressing?
Yes, I would have to say there's too many other priorities that are pressing. I think also it's designed to supplement our existing operating funds and not supplant something. I think taking the money and giving it to another agency to help provide services, there may be a conflict because it's for frontline law enforcement services in the city of Morro Bay is what the grant is supplied for.
Any questions over here? Okay, this is a public hearing. Anyone wishing to speak on this item, please come forward. And seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council.
Entertain a motion.
I'll move approval of Resolution 5910.
Second.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay. Let's, at this point, go back to our consent agenda. And did anyone want to pull anything on consent?
I would like to pull A3.
Okay. Anyone else?
I'd like to pull A2 and A4. And I don't want to pull A6, but I want to ask one question on A6.
Okay. So, may I have, well, let's ask your question on A6 right off the bat then. What's the question, Betty?
I believe it's for the city attorney. You rewrote for us, as we asked you to, the Board of Appeals that would be selected by the council, as our other committees are. There was no duration of the appointment. Is it per appeal, would you suggest, Mr. Schultz? Okay, thanks.
Okay, then I entertain a motion approving A1, A6, A7, and A8.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay, Betty, A2.
A2 is authorization to replace a Water System Operator 2 with a Water System Operator 1, which I think is a good idea, but again, someone's leaving, and I just want to be consistent with not hiring in more people, not knowing what our budget's going to look like next year. So I'll be voting no.
Any other comments on that item?
Yes, I would concur with the concerns about continuing down the same path of hiring somebody, but I will support this because it's a lower level. We need to change the benefits.
Okay. Any other comments?
I do have a question about the qualifications. I understand from an email from Mr. Wade that this is a new job description. Is that true?
That's correct. We've never had an operator one before.
Okay. So do we need to approve this?
That's also correct. And so if there are edits, in the email he asked a question specifically about the language in terms of the education requirements. Mm-hmm. If you guys wanted to make a tweak to the language, you could certainly do that at this time.
Yeah, I think it was just a matter of clarifying that it was fine the way it was, but I wasn't sure whether you had to possess it coming in or you had to possess it by the end of the year.
Yeah, and the intent is that the candidates don't have any requirements to begin, but within a year they should be able to pass the D2 and the T1. The reason that we've made this change, if I can take just 1 minute and kind of walk you through the background of the thought process, and it will be 1 minute, is that you go, in our recent recruitments for collection system operators, I was very jealous of the police when they said that they had 40 candidates. Our last collections worker, too, we had a single candidate. So we only had one qualified applicant. We gave him the job. We didn't have a choice. It was a quick interview. And the collections worker 3 that we're recruiting right now, that recruitment is closed. We've had 2 candidates that are qualified, and one of those was the same guy that applied for the 2. And so you go, we're not really reaching out and attracting utility workers. We're having a real struggle with that. And so that's forced us to sort of reassess. And what we're trying to do is grab some local talent and see if we can't train and retain a little bit longer. But quite frankly, we're always going to have a problem with retention. For a small city, we do some really cool things in terms of water treatment and distribution. And so we're always going to be training people because they can move on and make, a lot more money elsewhere.
Do you have a suggestion, Betty?
I don't have a suggestion. It seems just a little, I guess for lack of a better word, unprofessional.
It's an entry-level position, so I don't think it matters.
All right. Any other comments?
Move approval of A2.
And does that include approval of the job description?
Yes. Thank you.
Any further discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Noah?
Aye.
Betty?
No.
Okay. 4-1, Ms. Winholz opposed. Okay. And A3, Noah.
Yes. A3 is our side letter with the firefighters, local 3725, and I just pulled this more to recognize a very important first step in negotiations with our employees and the various unions that they're represented by, and this is a first step into a two-tiered benefit package that we've been talking about for some time, so it's satisfying to see some progress forward that's very significant, and we're thankful for the work that's gone into it and for the union to recognize the need and importance of making this adjustment. And from looking at the agreement, it looks like all sides are taking significant improvements out of the negotiations that help with their positions, and I think it's very supportive of each other what we're doing here. So I'm excited to see this. I'm looking forward to this being a building block to future negotiations with the other unions. So I will move approval and with the conditions as cited in the side letter with the Morro Bay firefighters.
Second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. All right, and A4, Betty.
A4 is considering adjusting maps to the development that's going to be happening at the Great American Fish, Burgess Landing, and Harbor Hut. And it disturbs me that we're extending these leases so far into the channel. And in asking for a map that compares these sites to their surrounding sites, it's quite a bit of an extension, and even goes beyond the T pier. So I am not in favor of this extending these lease sites so far. If we want to back them up maybe to the shortest one, I could do a little bit, because I still think then we could get around the T pier to get into the channel line. But I think this much of an extension is too much.
Well, we looked at this before and just had a discussion about that. So,
I may be that it's been a year or so, and I don't remember the discussion. But I do, by looking at this, see that it's too much.
Okay. Any other comments?
Rick. For Susan, if I could. What size of an increase would we get in the harbor fund from extending that lease or the site?
It's difficult to predict that at this point. They will have a lot more tour vessels operating out of there, so we would anticipate percentage growth. The new lease with them, they are on old leases that don't have any percent growth. So within not the first couple of years of the lease, but within 3 years, we should be starting to see some percent growth once the facility is built out. So it could be 3 to 5 years at the maximum. But thank there you. Would be an increase in the rent.
Thanks.
Ms. Mayor? I'm confused that you would say that we would put pleasure vessels down here, because I thought this was restricted zoning for fishing.
It's restricted to recreational sport fishing as well, and they are allowed to take out vessels for, say, whale watching in addition to sport fishing. So that's part of their uses that they're doing now and that they would be able to continue. Wouldn't be pure recreation.
It wouldn't be like the boats that go out with for banquets.
No.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, I had a question about the relationship of this extension into the channel versus other extensions like the T pier and so on. Would this become the furthest extended lease site into the channel in relation to what else we have existing?
Right now, it would, and I think it's important to note at this end of the harbor, we have a wider natural channel there, so it's not as much of an impact in certain areas of the harbor that are further to the south. It would be more of an impact into the channel. We have a lot more navigation room here. When they did present this a few years ago, Rick and Eric both looked at the plans for the docks and requested that the configuration be changed slightly to make sure we had adequate access to the North T Pier. So that was looked at in the plans. and that was accommodated in the specific configuration of the docks that they were approved in their CUP and the CDP. Okay. And the only other area that actually extends at least that far is the intake lease is extends about that far.
Okay. And do you anticipate that the project would actually be built out to the boundary?
No. The project includes areas so the boats can move around. I don't think the fingers extend all the way to the end. No.
Okay. And it's just so I can understand correctly, approximately how many feet is that extended beyond the T-pier?
I think when we looked at this, and Rob could maybe answer it better, approximately 100 feet?
Beyond the T-pier, it's about 10 feet beyond the T-pier.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
I have an exhibit in case you didn't receive it, showing it in relationship to the other lease sites.
Thank you for that.
Okay. Any questions?
Just to clarify, Mr. Leibig, this is an extension of 100 feet into the channel?
Yes, it is.
Where it is right now?
Approximately 100 feet into the channel.
Okay, thanks.
Eric, did you have anything to add on that, having looked at that yourself?
Yeah, good evening. We did look early on when Verges proposed this. There were several dock configurations that they were looking at putting in different designs to try and lessen the impact because there was an issue of pinching down the approach into the fish dock that Tognazzini sits in and Morbay Fish Company sits in. And that was addressed in the preliminary design phase of that in terms of different iterations of their dock. And we put some buoys out and did some kind of hands-on in place looking at different options to try and minimize that. And I think we did capture that. But as far as the extension out into the channel, as has already been stated, the piers already extend out into the channel. And this lease line adjustment just extends out sufficient to capture their new dock configuration that we've looked at that should minimize the impact on the vessels coming and going. I don't think, as Sue mentioned earlier, the line, I think, goes out a fair amount further than where their docks would actually be built because they have to put vessels in there as well. They couldn't build the dock right up to the edge of the lease line and then put the vessel outside of that. It all has to fit within that line, and I think they did a pretty good job of capturing all that.
Do you see this as precedent setting for other lease sites? Because it seems like there was an issue further down south earlier where someone wanted to go out for that may have even been Anderson's and they were made to go back in.
Yeah, I mean, is it precedent setting? Any one of these lease sites can ask for a larger area, and in this case they did because they have an ambitious project to bring in more slips, but the project would be vented. I mean, this went through the concept plan at Planning Commission, and this issue was discussed. It went to the council and was discussed, and then it went to Coastal Commission and was discussed. So the project from a CDP and CUP has been approved. This is more house cleaning now to make sure the lease sites and the actual city engineer's map coincides with what has been approved as to the project. So, yes, I mean, anybody could come forward. The Andersons did, and that was knocked back by, I don't believe it was council, the Coastal Commission did, because they thought it could impede the boat traffic. And so I think on an individual project, we'd have to look at it and see if it would or not, but it would still be decided by council as to each individual lease site.
Ken, Rick had a question.
What's the limit on the size of the boats that can be berthed in that area?
I don't recall the specifics of the dock configuration. I do know that they have boats now that are close to 50 feet, so I would assume they want to keep that at a minimum. It looked like some of them were going to be for much smaller boats as well. They were going to have a variety of sizes that they were going to accommodate within the footprint.
Okay. Are we set? And I'm going to move.
Approval of A4.
Okay.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Betty, were you in favor? Sorry, I didn't hear.
Yes.
Okay. So, unanimous. Thank you. Okay. Do we want to take a quick break? All right, quick break before we go on to item D1.
Okay, Jesse, there we go. Okay, we're back, and we're looking at item D1, which is a discussion of the Visitor Center, including the 2009-10 financial review, percentage of funding from the TBID, Morro Bay Tourism Business Improvement District, and representation on the board. And Andrea?
Thank you, and good evening, Mayor and Council members. This was kind of a catch-all staff report that we lumped in three different items to discuss this evening. For purposes of review, briefly, some time back, a few months ago, the Council directed or included in the Visitor Center Agreement that the City Administrative Services Director, Susan Slayton, performed a detailed financial review on each year's profit and loss statement for the Visitor Center. Ms. Slayton did review the document from fiscal year 2009 to 2010, and on September 24th of this year, Ms. Slayton and I met with Chamber Board President, the Interim Chamber of Commerce CEO, the Treasurer, and a Chamber Board member to talk a little bit about the analysis that Ms. Slayton had completed on that profit and loss statement. Initially, there were three areas that she identified for discussion in that meeting, and one was salary distribution, the second was sharing of the cost for common areas, and third was a distribution of such costs as like such as the copier lease. And that's based on the meeting, during the meeting, those items were reviewed, and the chamber members and staff indicated that sharing of the fixed costs, such as rent, copier, utilities, were divided on an 80%, 20% basis, with the city paying 80% and the chamber paying 20%. The approximate breakdown of the cost is provided in your staff report, so you get an idea of how those shook out, the largest being salary, benefits, and taxes at approximately $104,000. And then we go down from there, including figures on rent, lease equipment, so on and so forth. So the detail is provided for your information. When we got to a review of the salary, benefit, and taxes distribution, city staff was initially concerned that the city was paying for 60% of the total salary, benefit, and taxes of all Visitor Center staff members, and there is a total of 8. Of course, these people, we're not talking about 8 full-time people. I wanted to make that clear in the staff report. There's 8 people that work there. The majority of them are part-time. This item was discussed at the meeting we had in September, and the chamber members and staff were asked to review the figures and return to the city with further analysis on that breakdown. After review, the figures revealed that the city funds that go to the Visitor Center were paying for 50% of the event coordinator's salary, benefits, and taxes, and 60% of all other employees, including the executive director. While the amount of funding for the salaries is something that has been in our budget document for a number of years, there was some concern among city staff about the funding of all positions, specifically funding the event coordinator position and how that tied into the Visitor Center job. You review tonight, you may decide to further stipulate how these funds are spent or have staff work with the Visitor Center staff on salary distribution. The second item in the staff report is funding from the TBID. And the TBID board discussed funding of the Visitor Center at a special meeting that they had on July 24th. The motion from that meeting was recommending that 33% of the Visitor Center funding, which is approximately $50,000, be provided from the percentage collected through the assessment. The TBID's discussion was held prior to the City Council's discussion on June 28th, 4 days later, where the Council agreed to forego efforts to seek an increase in the TOT on the November 2010 ballot. At that June 28th meeting, the City Council did talk about the recommendation that the TBID had forwarded to them about funding 33% of the Visitor Center, as well as you had a discussion about other amounts up to, I believe, 40%. But at that time, on June 28th, you chose not to take any further action as you wanted to make sure the assessment percentage for the TBID was successfully increased from 2% to 3%. And then that was done, and that funding change will start November 1st, going from 2% to 3%. So you certainly can talk about the TBID funding the Visitor Center at any time, or you can move forward to that. I think it's important to certainly mention that the TBID at their last meeting in October 21st did briefly discuss the funding of the visitor center and had questioned staff about the possibility of bringing back this decision, because in their original motion that was approved by the board, there was no mention of oversight on the council board. There was certainly discussion, but their motion was very clear and did not mention that. And I wanted to make sure that I made that correction from the public comment this evening. I think it's important to note in your staff report that we haven't taken this item back for the TBID consideration because it came to you first. And certainly something you might want to look at and perhaps give back to the TBID if you feel concerned. It seemed, based on the discussion that the TBID board had at their October 21st meeting, it seemed their concern was more about oversight on how the mounting was handled than changing the percentage. That was the gist that I got, and I listened to that discussion just the other day. Just to make it clear that any funding from the TBID will relieve the general fund. We're talking approximately $50,000 if the 33% does go forward. As discussed at a previous council meeting, 40% would yield about $60,000 of funding. The third issue in our catch-all staff report is representation on the chamber board. I talked a little bit just previously about the TBID board interested in being represented on the chamber board. Specifically in this staff report, several council members at several different meetings have talked about the possibility of city staff being on the chamber board. And I don't think we talked distinctly between whether we're talking executive board or chamber general board, but I wanted to also bring that forward as the third issue to address in this staff report. I think in conclusion, you can see that there's a number of issues with the visitor center, and unfortunately, and as you're aware, in the past few months, there's been some significant personnel changes, including the chamber executive as well as the events coordinator. And as at the writing of the staff report and indicated by President McElhaney this evening, there has been no final decision on, I believe, either position at this time. So I think it's certainly important for the council to take a look at the staff report. I think it's vitally important to make some changes, and staff's certainly looking for that direction from you. But we might certainly want to be cognizant of the chamber regrouping and not make any decisions now without the certain chamber staff available. I think in closing also, I wanted to say that over the past few years, the city has certainly changed their oversight of the chamber or the visitor center. Several years ago, the city didn't particularly look at how the money was spent, and we've moved in the direction of looking at that more closely. And I certainly think that we're interested in your policy decision on how you would like us to direct that money to be spent at the visitor center. With that, I think I'll close my staff report. I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have. I look behind me. I was going to say Ms. Slayton is here as well, but I remember that I relieved her to go home. I'm confident I can answer any questions that you have about this.
Okay. I also want to add that there's someone here from the chamber and somebody here from the TBID if we do have any questions for them. It seems to me that the first thing we have to do is decide whether we want to deal with this tonight. I think that we should, simply because, and I understand the chamber is in a state of flux. I appreciate that. But whoever's in there, the decisions that we make would be what we are recommending to the chamber as far as our involvement. So I don't see that that changes no matter who the CEO is. I know I don't know how the rest of you feel about that. Do you feel this is an issue we should take up, or should it be postponed?
I'm looking at option three.
Which is?
On page two.
For the audience, I think we need to say what that three is.
Oh, I'm sorry. Direct the staff to come back within 60 days. And then we can still work on B and C, which are discussing the representation of the city staff and the percentage of funding from the TBID. But I would want to wait for I have a lot of questions and concerns, and I don't think we're going to be able to address a lot of those till we know who's running the chamber.
Okay, because you think that
they could have a different philosophy on how they're going to run things or different ideas that we haven't yet seen. It's kind of, you know, it's in limbo down there right now, and I'd rather wait 60 days. I have a lot of questions about this, and I don't know that they're all going to get answered tonight.
Well, I guess, again, my feeling is, and I'm not you know, set either way, but the fact that the visitor center is ours, it's not the chamber's. And so we're the ones that establish the parameters of the visitor center. So it doesn't really matter who the CEO is. We're the ones, the council, to say how we want the visitor center to operate. So I'm not sure that waiting is necessary and, in fact, maybe confusing to start a CEO right off the bat to plunge them into something like that. I don't know. Betty?
Well, I'd like to at least have the discussion and raise some of our concerns and see where we agree and don't agree, and if we end up then saying, okay, well, in 60 days we'll come back. But I think we need to talk about it a little bit.
Rick?
Did I hear you correctly? You said the event coordinator is not there anymore?
It's my understanding that the event coordinator person is no longer with the chamber / visitor center, and I do not believe they've rehired that position.
Is that correct, Don?
That's
correct.
Just on a comment, when you were talking about whether the city staff should be on the chamber board or the executive committee, I served on the chamber board for like 5 years. You want to be on the executive committee if you're going to be on one of them.
Okay, so we're going to have the discussion, even though we may
Can I ask a question first?
Sure, absolutely.
The city manager, two questions. Could you just, having a brain freeze, the 1% of the TOT would have amounted to how much approximately?
Between 160 and 180.
Had we increased it?
You're correct.
160 to 180. I didn't have the figures. Thank you. And a question then, and I'm looking at the approximate total here of the breakdown of allocation of costs and things. And I'm not trying to be petty, but when you look at $160,000, two items that came to me, and so this is where I guess I want some clarification on what things are, including the salary allocations. I have a huge problem that we've been paying all those salaries for people who are taking tours to Europe with the city's taxpaying money. Is the credit card charges and the reimbursables, which together are $4,500, I don't even know what that means.
If it's I'll start over. and we may have the chamber come up. My understanding is credit card charges are a charge where when you're using a credit card machine for such items, the city gets the same charges. Reimbursables, I cannot speak to. It was listed as reimbursables. So I'd probably ask for more specific details.
Okay, so my question, I guess, on the credit card one, and again, I'm not trying to drag this through the street. I know it's only 5% of the budget total, but if there were credit card charges we were paying for, but if it were the merchant fee, I wouldn't understand why the city visitor center would be paying for that unless we're recognizing revenue from something that's being sold and going into the visitor center funding. So that's why I couldn't understand how that could possibly be a charge for us.
And it sounds like that might be a follow-up question that we have.
Okay. Thank you.
Just on that topic, I really would like to see as we come back to this, as in option three, there is basically a 60-day return on the discussion. But as we come back to this, that we see a better breakout of where the different groups are contributing and how this 161 approximately 1,000 that we are spending is in relation to the rest of the chamber's budget, the contributions from the TBID and so on, just to really break this out, because I think there's so many concerns and unknowns floating around right now. We just have to really bring everything to the surface. This is a good start, but we need to expand on it and make sure that it's very clear about where the different funds are coming from as far as visitor center operations in relation to the other elements of the chamber.
And Councilman Spuckler, are you looking at that from this point forward or this point past? We can certainly look into both those. Certainly from this point forward is understood.
Yeah.
We may have difficulty in getting information from this point past, but we can certainly look that way as well.
I would appreciate the past, but moving forward, it's just very clear that we have to keep it as separate and distinct as possible. Right now, it's obvious that we've merged into a relationship that really we never, as a as a city council authorized completely. And so now that we're starting to focus in a little more and consider our options, it's just the more detail and data, the better off we're going to be as far as our decision making.
Did we want to ask Mr. Doubledy about those charges? See if he can explain.
Only
them.
If he knows. I don't know if he knows.
Don, are you aware of what the, and you have to come to the microphone.
Otherwise, no.
Credit card charges and the reimbursables are?
Not specifically. I know the credit card charges are the use of the credit card machine, and I'm not sure exactly what the reimbursables were that you're referring to. I took over the 1st of July, and what you're looking at is a rehash of last year's stuff. And I don't know if you want to hear what I got to say. Nobody really wants to know this stuff.
Well, we'll just ask questions.
I'll back off and just say, no, I think there's some questions as to what has been done last year, and that there are already been some major changes in the last 4 months. And there will be a need for a lot more changes.
Okay, but stick around because we may have more questions. Okay. I called Mayor Reese from Pismo Beach today and asked if she had anything as to what they do with their visitor center. And I know it's not apples to apples probably, but I'm looking at their compensation, and they pay their visitor center $74,724 a year. And that includes free rent. So I subtracted that out, and I subtracted out the billboard and came up with $144,300 for us. So it's twice as much as Pismo is spending. Plus, they also have a designated promotions person on staff. So I'm a little...
How many employees are
there? I don't know. What, for the visitor center?
I'm just for their in-house.
This doesn't specify. It just says sufficient personnel and appropriate supervision to perform the services. So it doesn't really say that, how many.
Nor do we know if they're volunteers.
Right.
Yes.
So,
pardon me.
Well, no, I just wanted to give us something to compare to. And it's rather interesting because I was a little surprised, too, at how much of the salary we're paying. With the breakdown that you're talking about, what I would like to see is how much the chamber dues provide. I want to know what the chamber's putting into it, the businesses, the dues. I pay my dues. How much of that is covering salaries?
Can I ask the city manager, when you, Ms. Slayton, audited the books, I was under the understanding that you had the chambers and the visitor center both. Is that incorrect? That we could do a comparison of what?
We do have a profit and loss statement from the chamber. Ms. Slayton focused her efforts on the visitor center profit and loss statement, but we do also have a visitor center profit and loss statement.
So there's no allocation breakdown of what our share of the copier is or our share of the rent based on square footage or any of those things have ever been done?
The numbers that you have in your staff report are the 80%. That the city is paying the remaining 20%, so $13,000 is 80% of the rent, and the chamber is paying the other 20%. I'm sorry if that wasn't clear in the staff report. In terms of salaries, it's a little bit different. The chamber, the visitor center is, or the city, we're talking semantics here, the city is funding 60% of the majority of the salaries and taxes and benefits, with the chamber providing the other percentage, with the exception of the event coordinator, which I believe came out to be 50%. So we have we can give you those other numbers, but it's the reciprocating amount.
I have a question. The $50,000 that the T-bid would kick in, is the $160,000 currently being paid by the city budget without the T-bid?
Mm-hmm. You're correct.
So would we realize a $50,000 savings, and if so, would that go back into accumulation?
That was the
the discussion that the council had back in June was that if the and you'll correct me if I'm missing points of it, but basically the discussion was we're not interested in putting in the increase in the TOT, which would realize about $160,000-$170,000, but we would like the TBID to fund a portion of the visitor center. Where that $50,000 will go, I would assume would go back into the accumulation fund, but we'd certainly take that direction from you.
Are you still doing questions or comments now, or just whatever?
Either one at this point.
I have another question. Okay. The 33% that you've listed on here, then, just for clarification, is just strictly what the TBID contribution would be separate from the $9,000, the $6,000, the other? It would be that and the $50,000 if we did 33%.
The I'm not sure where
it's not inclusive of those other items.
The funding of the VCB and the AGP, you're correct. It's a separate amount, an
just
additional amount.
Clarification. Okay.
That brings up another point. I don't know how many of you know this, but the director of the VCB has also quit. So they don't have anybody either, and they're not hiring anybody immediately. So they are also in flux. It's like all of promotion is...
Yeah. Well, I'd like to suggest that this is a wonderful opportunity to relook at how we do our promotions money and come back to my old song and dance about hiring in-house and pulling this money together and pulling in the TBID and the promotions committee and seeing what we need to do in that respect.
Well, I'm not sure I'm ready to go all the way to hiring someone at the kind of salary that would be needed to support them. However, I do think that this is a good idea for us to make some very definite, strong suggestions as to what we expect for our money from the chamber for what we're giving them. Because right now, I don't think we've been getting our money's worth, quite honestly.
I think you could even go as far as saying that, even saying that we have expectations about what the chamber should do with our money or how our money should be utilized and managed by the chambers, maybe even going too far. I think right now we have the opportunity to step all the way back and say what is the best case scenario coming out of this? What's going to give the stakeholders the most value for the money that we're putting into this? What's going to create the most efficient, inviting visitor center that is possible if we're going to continue with that and really take advantage of the concept of coming back in 60 days or so with a better plan and some more time to discuss these options and really pause and think what is going to give us the best value is kind of where I see it. And there's a lot of options out there, as Ms. Winholtz just pointed out. There's a completely different direction available to us, and I would hope that we would identify some key elements that we think are important as far as values, but try to leave open those opportunities to discuss them with the stakeholders and hopefully start to vet some options and see if something starts to rise to the surface as being a really good solution that we can get more details about and then come back and have more focused dialogue about the smaller components of that choice. Or choices.
So I'm trying to understand how you want to see that process go. I mean, you don't want to give any direction at this point?
No, I think it's important for us to give general direction, like oversight is a real key value that mm-hmm. seems like everyone's talking about here from us and the city's perspective. The TBID's been very clear that they would like some oversight in how their promotions dollars are spent
right.
in relation to the visitor center. I'm sure the chamber would want it as well if they're continue to be involved. It seems clear that a zero-based budget, as Ms. Borchard and others have suggested, in relation to those dollars should be just kind of a mandatory part of the budgeting element of where those dollars are being spent. I would like to see a roundtable discussion with the different stakeholders, that opportunity for them to really sit down with their groups like the Promotions Committee, the TBID, internally with the city and the chamber themselves, and for them to bring forward some ideas and then have an opportunity outside of a council meeting to actually discuss and have some dialogue about the options. And I don't expect us to come up with all those details tonight, but that I think it would be good for us to invite people and stakeholders to have those discussions and to really encourage that, promote that, and you know, basically offer an open ear to ideas coming out of these next couple of weeks and months, and then start to make some key choices from there. Because it seems like we have the time, we have clear changes happening, so let's not rush into making any very firm decisions tonight.
Okay, I've got a question. They've got no, well, and I'm not sure what the interim director's been getting paid, but they've not had a director for a couple months now. They don't have an event coordinator. So what happens to the funding? Do we get credit for that if we're not paying those salaries anymore? I mean, I'm serious. That's our money.
Hence the need for oversight from a
right,
city representative.
Right. And ironically, the one that we were paying the least amount of the salary is the events director, who I would think has the most direct impact on the city revenues as far as, you know, all those events that bring in money. So that's kind of odd for me, too, paying so much for the CEO as opposed to an event director who there's a definite nexus there. I don't understand that at all. Okay, so where do we want to go? What do we want? If are we in agreement that we want to do some sort of a roundtable, subcommittee, something with the new council, obviously?
I have a strong concern that all of this not fall on the city manager position. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a running the city that's more important, and that if this can be designated to another staff person, who I'm sure they're all overloaded, but maybe Ms. Layton or someone else, but I don't think this should be front and center for her.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly if we pull in the T-bid and the promotions and whatever representation from the council, there's a lot of bodies there, and certainly we need a staff person there. But and this is important to the city, but it's not the most important to this mm-hmm. item in the city.
That's right.
Well, you mentioned about the fact there's no CEO or event coordinator, but there's also no prospects for new board members at this point. I talked with some people from Chamber today, and they're going to have their installation dinner in January, so they're going to be putting out notices for vacancies. But I'd rather see and wait until these positions are filled and the board is filled, and revisit this in February when we know what's going on.
And invite our promotions committee and the T-bid to start some dialogue. I mean, really, it seems like it's time to vision the best scenario possible and then
and
work
it may
towards
or may,
that.
And it may or may not be related to the chamber. I think we have to keep that open. I mean, we're not here to help them along. We're here to service the public and the visitors who come to town. And if the chamber can fit into that, that's great. But if not, I think you're right, the visioning, what's going to be best for the city.
All right, we're contracted with them on a fiscal year, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So we have an existing contract that goes to July.
With a cancellation clause in it that we included last year.
Well, I'm just saying we've got time to deal with this if we want to. And the T-bid is supposed to start their funding as of November?
When the council discussed this item, that was where you were looking as soon as the collection of the 3% started, which will start has started now in November.
Because if indeed they are going to start funding some of this, then I think that we need that oversight position right away, whoever it is. And I know that's an issue because Andrea spends a lot of time on TBID and promotions right now, but we also need somebody from staff to do that. And I don't know, would Susan have the time?
It clearly sounds like the council wants to make some changes, and that's the first. That's the first information that we have. So I would suggest maybe let us think
think a little bit about it at staff level and bring back one sort of plan. I think a meeting with the stakeholders is a good idea. I'm thinking, you know, just thinking out loud, perhaps starting with a joint planning, a joint TBID, Community Promotions Committee. But if I could vet it out a little bit more, I'd certainly be happy to bring back a plan in the next couple of weeks or as soon as actually to our, maybe our, perhaps our next council meeting about here's an idea on how to go about this, because it clearly sounds like you're looking for some change, and I'm looking at to make sure that the money is spent. You give us some policy direction on how you want these funds to be spent. That would probably be, instead of trying to fine-tune it here, at least we could give you a framework, and maybe you could take that framework and tweak it a little bit, exactly what you want. I didn't see that putting off a couple of weeks. So it wouldn't be right today, but in a couple of weeks, we could bring it back.
Well, how about all of us right now tonight just make a list of the things that we would like to see dealt with by that group of stakeholders, the results that we'd like to come out of that, the things that are concerns for us. And that way, at least there's a beginning.
I like the idea Ms. Luker has. She sits on all those committees, and I think to allow her the opportunity to form some sort of game plan and then go to the stakeholders or as she's there as a representative of the city to start bringing them together. But I hate to start getting all these people on board for something.
No, yeah. Yeah. No, I'm saying just from us, our ideas, the
and
things that we have a concern to her. Right.
Because
I want to know, you know, where's our funding going while these positions are not filled?
Mm-hmm.
That should be credited to us because it's not being paid out in salaries. I want to know, what was the other thing that concerned me? I would like to know why the allocation of us paying so much of the salaries of those people and not of the event coordinator. I mean, and not that I'm complaining, I'm just, I don't understand that, and I'd like some explanation of how they justify the CEO 60% of his salary going to the visitor center, because I don't see that. I don't see the work of the CEO going to the visitor center. So an allocation of funding. What else?
When was the last audit done on visitor center and chamber?
Well, the city is providing a financial review. An audit is really a stronger term than what we're doing. We're doing a financial review of the visitor center numbers. I can't speak to when an actual financial audit was done on the chamber side. I'm guessing they do some sort of yearly audit, but I don't know that.
Well, I would think that an audit's called for, especially with all these
things. We're going to pay for it?
But I think Ms. Luker said that Ms. Slayton did review their profit and loss operating statement, whatever they submitted, so there were some comparisons for what our share and their share has been. And that's obvious that it's not equitable. I think we're very aware of that right now.
Well, and I guess to continue my staffing concern, I'd like to know which members of the staff that 60% is being paid for and what they do in the visitor center. Do you want to hear from Don?
You can answer it.
Sure. Come on up and tell us.
Just to be clear, the city's not being charged for anybody that is not actually working or being paid. I fired the event coordinator. I did not feel that the job was being done appropriately. I have reassigned staff so that more staff are working on events rather than one person controlling an event. It's more of a committee approach to things. It's much more healthy, and it allows for more people to be involved in case one person's not able to be there. You have backup. Very important to be able to cross-train your employees to have people to fill in, not have one person who's the only one to do it. And very clearly, if they're not working and we don't have an event coordinator right now, you're not paying for an event coordinator. You're paying for our part-time staff who is helping with the events. The CEO, interim CEO, is doing the job of the event coordinator right now. And I don't really see that there will be a need for an event coordinator in the future. I see more of these things as being a committee approach.
Okay.
The an audit, I don't think, is something you really want. I think what's more important is that you have more people sitting down and going through line-by-line items as a committee and seeing what these things are, not necessarily somebody who is a licensed auditor or whatever going through numbers. It's more important that the individuals have a chance to sit down and see where every penny is going. Mm-hmm. And we really need more of that, a lot more of that. I really think that you need a situation where the promotions committee, the TBID, the chamber are all working together. We're all going in the same direction. We all have the same common goals. To have a rift between these is just wrong. We really need to have a common direction and go in that direction.
Okay. Thank you.
As I said, we're happy. It sounds like I've got some basic ideas of what you're looking for. I think we've come as the city, you know, five years ago, there was no, at that point, interest, I guess I'll say, gently in how this money was divided up, and now there's some extreme interest, in which I think is a good sign. So we're certainly happy to come back with to you with a plan. I will state that when Susan did her initial financial review, she didn't, and I think it's really important to say, she didn't see huge red flags. She said she saw areas where the salary distribution seemed like it maybe didn't make sense, mm-hmm. But she didn't see any huge red flags. I think that's important to say. You certainly have the ability to let the visitor center know where we want that money spent. So, again, I'm happy to bring back a plan, and you can tweak it. Feel free to provide input to me about your concerns. I've got some of them, but what you've got, and I can put that together for our next council meeting.
Okay. Well, and just to correct something that you said, Don, nobody's trying to create a rift between. Certainly we're all looking for the same goal, and that's the success and economic input that these events and activities have. But at the same time, we really need to, with the economic situation the way it is, we've really got to look at where our funding is going and is it going in the best place. So the other thing that I would add to the things that I would like to have considered is definitely there needs to be someone on the executive board, either from promotions or from the city. We've got to have somebody on there who's a part of that decision-making process. So, and I'm not going to have any other input on these ideas, so I'm giving them all to her tonight.
Are you looking for that this evening, or are you just saying?
No, I'm just saying that I would like that one of the things considered, because I think that really is important.
Well, I feel that position, and I appreciate that Ms. Luker's time is certainly very valuable, and we have a lot of issues, but this is a lot of money between the taxpayers' money and the TBIDS money and all the organizations, and if she or her designee could be there. It wouldn't mm-hmm. have to necessarily be her, but I think until this gets turned around, some there needs to be some oversight, just like you would, she would oversee any budgeted department in our city.
Yeah, so. Well, and I think that's the interesting point for bringing this all back in-house, is because you're looking for responsibility, you know, someone to be held accountable, and we're not in charge of the chamber. They are a separate nonprofit. And if we want to be in control of our money, then we should have a person who oversees that. And if we end up out of that, then contracting out a small portion of that as a visitor center, but to have that person in-house who's held accountable and promotes the city, I think would time and again create money for us.
Ms. Luker, as you develop this plan, or concept, I would appreciate if you actually gave the TBID and the Promotions Committee a dry run before it comes back to the council to get some input from them, hear from them what their values are. So when it comes back to the council, we're not just wondering, okay, what's going to happen with this when we send it on to them. Give them a first crack at it. Seems very important that we start to establish higher trust, and especially with what the TBID's last comments were from their previous meetings about their commitment and contributions, how that's being managed and what that money's going for. I think it would help develop that trust even further as we move forward with our partnerships.
We can certainly put that on their agenda for a discussion item, actually, in the month of November.
All right, so if we're going to go with option 3, are we going to approve a funding amount from the TBID? Yes. And are we going to recommend having a representative on the,
yes,
the executive board? Okay. So we're going to go with the 33%, I assume, which is what they're suggesting?
Well, okay, there was two options on there. They suggested 33%, but when we originally talked about it, we discussed 40% because the TOT, that's why I was asking, I couldn't remember, is 160 to 170,000 that we would have supplemented our general fund with had we put that on the ballot. So,
well, given that this is still going to be in a kind of a state of flux, why don't we go with the 33% for now while we're going through this whole discussion and see what comes out of that? Would that be agreeable?
Yeah, I don't want to get so hung up on percentages. I guess at some point I would rather look at a, you know, a possible, even if you'd say 33% or 40% or whatever, not to exceed a certain
right,
amount.
Yeah, okay.
Because the percentages can change. So right. I would probably want to be not right. to exceed.
I think that's important enough of a concept to actually include in the latter part of item B under that option in the motion. And I support 33% for now.
Okay, so 33% or $50,000, according to their information, beginning in the month of November, right? Everybody okay with that on this?
It's actually more like $52,000 or $53,000 if you.
Well, there's there.
They were rounding off.
Chart said 33% or 50,000 approximately.
See, that's where I think we're going to start getting so, caught in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's
right.
Why
so I would say we could go with that.
I'd like to know if these decisions are temporary until things get resolved. And I think that needs to be in the motion, that it's temporary.
Well, I think that is, yeah. It says to discuss further and report back to the City Council in 60 days. So
under temporary.
Option three, yeah, that would be.
And adopt these as temporary numbers.
Right.
In case there's other changes.
And then the other question is, do we want the representative to have a voting or non-voting position on the executive board?
Absolutely a voting position on the executive board.
Absolutely.
How do you dictate that?
We have a contract.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, how do you dictate
that? We set the
that?
Parameters of our contract. If they don't want to accept the parameters of our contract, we have the option of canceling it and finding some other entity to manage our contract.
So are you saying we're going to amend our contract?
Well, sure. Why wouldn't we?
Then are we amending that tonight?
I think we're all doing all this on a temporary basis.
Yeah.
To move forward. Well, that's up to you. I'm open to discussion.
I'm just saying, because if it's a contract and we're amending it, then they have to approve the amendment, too.
Mr. Schultz, would you weigh in?
Sure. They'd have to amend the contract, but anything's negotiable with the contract. And, you know, we have money, and they might have other demands to make also during the negotiation of the contract. So I think that's what will happen in the next 60 days. The message I think that staff is getting is one of the major terms is we want to be on the executive committee and have more of a say and know exactly where the money is being sent and send that message to them. But it's negotiable. It would have to come back as an amendment. I think what the motion is to go and make that amendment or come back as to why that they won't agree to that amendment.
Okay. So going with option three with these specifications would work. Okay.
So just for clarification on the executive committee now, it's the CEO. Who else, Don?
The CEO is not a member of the executive committee.
You need to come to the microphone.
It's the officers.
Gotcha. Okay, so you got four folks.
So the other question I'd have then, it sounds like the TBID is also interested in having some element of oversight, and it would seem like if the executive committee is considered that oversight, then they should have a representative on that committee, or an alternative concept should be developed so the TBID is assured that the money that they're contributing is being managed well and that they have access to that opportportunity.
Maybe they'd be a member of the board rather than the executive board.
The executive board representation they would have would be our city rep who oversees the TBID money. So I would see that. But in the past, when I was on the chamber board and president, we had seat representation for the Merchants Association, the Commercial Fishermen's Association, and the Hotel Restaurant Association. And I don't know if those three spots are designated still or not. And so maybe that's something that we can revisit so that it... As long as the TBID is funding, they certainly should have an opportunity to have a set seat on the board representing that industry.
Well, and lots of them are going to be, they're going to be members of the chamber anyway because they're business people. So.
Which is fine because they'd fill the seat, but it should be, you know, specific.
Right, as a TBID representative, but they, it wouldn't be a conflict because they're already a member of the chamber too. So, okay. Anything else that we want to direct for this future discussion?
Well, you know, we've talked about vacation rentals being included at some point. I know that becomes a whole another complex element and workload to include that, but it would seem like something that we don't want to forget as we move through this transition. And if we can find ways to loop that in or have that be involved, it would be a good addition.
Thank you, Councilmember Smuckler. We have not forgotten that. When we talked about this at the council level, we talked about changing the percentage from 2 to 3 and getting that done. And then the next step was taking a look at vacation rentals. And we know that's on the bubble. We need to. That's something that's a work task that we will clearly not forget about, especially in light of how well our vacation rentals are doing. So it's not forgotten. It's right there.
All right. So, Carla, you want to make a motion?
Oh, sure, whatever you said. I will attempt to. So we're going to move towards option three at this, adopting option three at this point with the city manager coming back with a work plan or of sorts in within 60 days, approving 33% of the funding starting the month of November, and recommend that the city have a designee voting member on their executive committee that would be the city manager or their representative, and also to include seats on the board for the TBID seat on the board.
A seat on the board, okay.
As long as, let me before you second it, as long as they have funding
involved
for the visitor center.
Okay. Sorry. Seconded by Rick. Any further discussion?
Just wanted to know if you wanted to include the not to exceed element or if that was just already.
Not to exceed.
Okay.
Yes. Please.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? None. Okay. Next item, item D3. This is a request to access park fee funds to upgrade the city park irrigation system. The patient, Mr. Wood.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. The CalSense site controllers are an intricate part of components to our Morro Bay Parks system, irrigation systems, and have been for over a decade now. Upgrades to the systems would enable us to, the standalone site controllers, to be linked via radio with input devices such as an evapotranspiration and rain gauges, as well as soil moisture content gauges. And these would gather and utilize real-time data to optimize any of our irrigation events. The city department, our department, has been testing some demo equipment out at City Park. This includes the hardware and the software. We've been doing this since March of 2010. The setup at City Park has demonstrated to be very positive results, very reliable system. So we'd like to take those results. We've calculated some savings at other locations, and our targeted parks for the upgrades to the irrigation controllers would be City Park, Monte Young Park, Tidelands Park, Lila Kaiser, Cloisters, and also Del Mar Park. This item went to the Recreation Parks Commission for review at their regular meeting of October 26, 2010. They agreed the proposed project would benefit and was an appropriate use of park fee funds. They motioned and was unanimously carried that they would recommend the approval of this item to council at tonight's meeting. We staff requesting up the use of about up to $35,000 of park fee funds to complete the irrigation upgrades. The calculation savings in water consumption for these upgrades will be approximately 30% of the average annual consumption at these particular sites. Basically, we're looking at approximately $42,000 worth of savings annually. We project no impacts to the general fund other than staff's time preparing reports and related paperwork. The return on investment of this size, it was approximately 10 to 12 months. And I would turn it over for any questions you have at this time.
Any questions? Betty?
I have two. Will staff be putting these systems in, or does the company that provides you with the equipment put them in?
That's a good question. Thank you. This price of up to $35,000 would include installation at these sites.
And my second question is, how much will then be left in the park and lieu fund?
Right now, our current balance is $181,000. We have encumbered approximately $60,000 in previous projects, so the balance after this project would be somewhere between just close to about $100,000.
And is that annually enriched every year, or is that just working down every year?
It fluctuates depending on the number of subdivisions that happen. Recently, we've had a few subdivisions that have gone through, and when they finalize the subdivisions, there's a Quimby Act fees that are introduced, and that formula is introduced during the subdivision review. So it really depends on the development within the city.
So it's been sparse.
We tried our goal, and it's kind of an informal goal of not spending more than we receive in a year. Sometimes we'll be successful, sometimes we won't, but we're very watchful. We don't want it to dip too low, but we are trying to utilize these funds the best of our ability, and we feel that this water conservation project is definitely noteworthy.
I agree.
Questions?
Question?
I have two questions, please. So I guess I must be looking at an old budget sheet, because I have the park and lieu budget from 2010-11, and it says we have $110,000 as our ending balance in it.
And we recently had some contributions this fiscal year. I believe that the Fester Felt project went through, and that was approximately $65,000 contribution to this fund.
For the park fund. And then my second question is, if it's a 10-month payback for the irrigation project, wouldn't that be an operating item versus a capital item, capital expense? I mean, is the intent that you're going to repay this money into that account because you're going to recognize the revenue?
We're not looking to reimburse this account. That's not what this account's for. The subdivision, this Park B fund is to enhance parks. So we're going to be using that money to enhance the current parks, and we have no obligation to repay the fund. As far as operating budget, we have not budgeted for an upgraded irrigation to $35,000 in the current operating budget. So we would want to use those funds outside of the general fund to make this happen and hopefully realize the savings in the next, hopefully, 1, 2, 3 years, depending on the weather. I mean, it could rain a lot or it could be really dry. So we'll be able to use water. We're going to be using it very smartly. And hopefully we'll be paying this back and realize real savings in the years 2 and 3 and 4 and on. So that would certainly offset the general fund.
But that's why I'm not understanding that. If you said in here in 10 months you'd recover the money, it'd be $42,000. If it's $35,000 to do it, then why wouldn't you just take it from your operating expense?
Ms. Borchardt, isn't it more of a savings that they'll be realizing and that the general fund will go up a little bit?
But
then
it would offset the operating budget if you were
right,
saving the money.
Right. But you're doing a capital project that you wouldn't have done otherwise.
I just see it's taking money out of the account that we could do internally within that within that operating cost.
I have one.
Okay, Rick.
Historically, what's the life expectancy on these upgrades?
That is a pretty solid question. I don't have a real answer for you. I'm sorry. I don't have the life expectancy. I would imagine the irrigation controllers we have now have been working in place for over 10 years. So the upgrade, I would imagine, is pretty close to that.
Okay. Anything else?
I'm just curious to know if you had any thoughts about potential for public education. This is a large smart meter type system that has a smaller option for a homeowner or a business owner that would be compatible with their smaller irrigation system. As we move through this, do you think there's a chance that it could be presented very simply as a call and promotion of these sort of concepts to other property owners within the city and encouraging them to perhaps utilize some of this sort of a system for their own property?
I think that the public outreach is certainly warranted at some time down the line. We did so in our solar project. We came back with a year review and letting folks know how much money we're saving, how much power we're generating through the solar project. And we could do the same with this water irrigation upgrade. We can bring them back to the RPC with a status report and let you know how much money we saved or how much water we saved
after at least a year's worth of operating. I think that a lot of those savings may or may not be realized right off the bat. It depends on how much, like I said, how accurate the numbers are and how much water we do conserve. So I definitely would want to go with some public outreach. I think it's going to be down the line within 6 to 12 months before we realize something worth reporting.
Yeah, and I would expect a body like the school district would be a real key one to, if they haven't explored this option, to, you know, let them know, hey, that we're seeing great success with this, and just a general FYI would be appreciated.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyone, a motion from anyone?
I'll go ahead and make a motion. Move that the City Council approve the use of up to $35,000 of park fee funds for the upgrade to the city park irrigation systems.
Second.
Let's give it to Betty. Okay. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. Item D4, discussion on the status of the currently acknowledged tree committee and whether to make it official. Betty.
I would say the tree committee's been, we've had a tree committee in the past, over the last decades or so. It was an official city committee. When the Public Works Advisory Board was formed, it was subsumed under that committee. I think they took three standing committees and moved them into one. So we've been without a tree committee as long as I've been on the council and since before. So it's been a while. And yet we have recurring issues with trees coming up pretty frequently, at least every year, in one way or another. When Mr. Smuckler came on council, he became very proactive, I think, in terms of this kind of passion that he has for vegetation, and took it upon himself to get some people together and actually do some physical work to help with the trees around town. My concern comes that as this committee's been in existence at least a year and a half, I would say, that it started off with people that were interested and knew each other and got together and went out and dug holes and did good work. But as it's evolved, it's developed respect and some status with staff as well as the council. And my concern has become that this is a committee of professionals who know their work, but I don't feel that there's a balance there or lay representation to say, yes, this is how a professional would do it, but this is how we in the public perceive it. It's, for me, the analogy would be with the Planning Commission. We have a planning staff who are professionals. We have planning commissioners, some of which have some technical background. But we also, at least I appreciate having lay people on the Planning Commission who can then look at the community from the lay perspective, and you need that balance. And so my concern is, as this committee moves forward with not just influence but the work that they're doing, that it have some kind of balance to it. And that's where my concern comes in.
Okay. Questions for Betty or comments? I've got to admit, in looking this over, I hadn't thought about the idea of making it like the bike committee, and I like that. I think that's a good idea because it's very similar in that it's people with a specific interest who have grouped together outside of anything that's really the city.
It is and it isn't like the bike committee. At least how I have observed our bike committee function is that once a year they'll send us a list of recommendations, which then we either approve or don't approve, and that goes on to the slow cog for their non-vehicular funding. They're not out there, digging holes or planning posts for where bicycle lines go. That comes through staff. But they can recommend that, but they don't do physical work. And this committee is actually going out, in my opinion, and changing the face of our community. And it may be for the better, but it's from their perspective and not from the perspective of the community.
I'd like to actually make a couple statements about that. As a committee, we have basically operated as an advisory committee. Every action that we've taken has been run through city staff, our advisory boards, and our council. As the example would be the landmark tree recommendation that we brought forward. We provided that to the Public Works Advisory Board, the Planning Commission, ultimately the Council, and basically, as soon as we released it to the Planning or the Public Works Advisory Board, our statement was: we've done what we felt we can do as a committee of volunteers that work in the industry, and we have citizens that aren't in the industry on the committee. And we didn't want to get involved with the bureaucracy of how this would fit into the city policy and how it would be implemented. We wanted to really turn that over to the process. And from our evaluation, we were successful at doing that. And it underwent changes. And ultimately, what was approved by the council. So I think there's definitely that balance is there. For an example, outside of the policy realm for all of our planting projects and the volunteer work we've done, that's all been approved either by staff or by the council. And so at this point, we haven't done anything that was really affecting the public property that wasn't given approval and support from the city itself. And the example of that is just for every one of our major plantings, like at Lila Kaiser, there was actually a concept in a meeting where we said, where in town, if we have the interest, and we did, to spend some time and volunteer and help beautify, what could be... what could be a great spot for us to do this work? And Lila Kaiser, near the parking lot, was suggested, and we actually followed through with that and developed, Wally McCray, a landscape architect on the committee, developed a plan that we then submitted to our staff, who reviewed it and made sure that it was in compliance and compatible with city needs and vision. So in every step of the way, we've deferred to that as basically the guiding principles, and we see ourselves as advisory and as a volunteer body that can help in as much capacity as possible. So we talked at one point about trying to establish ourselves further, working, as you've cited in some of the options, working more closely under PWAB as a sub-component of PWAB, or becoming our own committee. And from the committee's perspective, I noticed that most of the committee members really were willing to do whatever it took to be able to stay active, but there was a concern that we could get bogged down more in process and government process, I guess, and be pulled away from really the intent and of volunteering and being active. That said, we keep minutes of our meetings, thanks to our secretary, Mr. Newton, and we have a treasurer who keeps track of the money that we have managed, which was originally given to us by Morro Bay Beautiful. So, and we keep very close touch with Morro Bay Beautiful. We'll be at their next board meeting. Our meetings are always open to the public. In our conversation earlier, you mentioned that you don't hear about when our meetings are, and I think we could perhaps announce the meetings more. They're quarterly approximately, and I have announced those at city council meetings, but that would be an area where, you know, we're looking for people to come to our meetings, and we invite that sort of involvement. That's an exciting part of what we do, and we don't turn anyone away. We notice, though, that meetings are hard to attend for a lot of people, and I think that's what makes it so special, that we have professionals and citizens coming out and spending time not only getting active but actually coming out to meetings and helping to plan and do the legwork that it takes. So I think we're pretty comfortable with where we are, and I would say it's very close to what the bike committee is doing. And if there's things that we need to do to refine that further, then the committee's open to doing that.
Okay. Rick, Carla, comments?
I, you know, there were three options on here, but I actually have a fourth option that wasn't included in this, and that would be to make no changes to the committee at all. I think that at best I would see as Mr. Smuckler realizes that there could be a little better community outreach in regards to some of the things, like when there are tree removals, the city approved it, but it's really a notification and outreach, and I think you guys have done a great job, and everything that's been done has either gone to staff or come to council. So I see a fourth option, and that's not to do anything. I think they do a good job.
Okay, Rick?
I like your fourth option.
So do I.
Well, then just let me have my last say then, and that would be that for me it's like a group of people that have the ear of staff but are not official. It would be like the three amigos from a few years ago who took on the finances of the city and wanted to have influence, but not official influence. Since then, they have become members of the Oversight Committee for Measure Q and different things that they've whatever tried to do. But my concern is that there's not a special interest group, even though they're good people and even though they're doing good work, that it becomes a special interest group that has no oversight. And I know that you say that it does, but when you have the ear of a government body without official standing, it can become you don't know what can happen.
Okay. Does anyone want to make a motion?
I will. I move that we create an option 4 to make no changes to the status of the tree committee at this time.
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay. 4-1. Ms. Winholz opposed. Future agenda items. Anybody?
I have one. I would like, I spoke with Ms. Lichtenbaum earlier about this, but an update about the Coleman Beach event and the dredging there. Seems like there's some things going on as far as survey of the incidents, and there's definitely some concern in the community about it. So an update about where that's going as far as action and if there needs to be a statement made to the involved parties so that it's recognized. That would be an important thing for us to recognize.
Can that be just a memo to the council?
Let's start with that.
In my conversation with Ms. Lichtenbaum, she said that she'd be comfortable bringing back basically a summary of the event and what the activities to date. She's been in touch with a representative from NOAA and had some information that I think would help. And I think whatever happens, it's important that the public gets a chance to hear the status.
So you're
status.
Looking for just an update report?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that...
So you're looking for a memorandum to come back to council and update a staff report? I'm not sure. I'm a little confused.
I think a staff report would be good in that it's basically an informational report on what the event was and the action going forward in response to it and how it's being addressed.
I'd second that.
I'm sorry. I'm lost as to what event you're talking about.
The dredging event where the southern component of Coleman Beach, Mother's Beach, with the dredge through the channel zone there was a slump that a significant portion of the southern end of that beach was lost as basically it slid into the channel.
Oh.
So there's been concerns from members of the public about and questions about what happens. And in my conversation with Lichtenbaum, there's some follow-up that NOAA's doing as far as surveying and some information that would help everyone get the details of what happens and
wouldn't it
and
go
understand.
Through harbor?
That might more be a good venue is to do it through the harbor department, but I think
harbor
it'd be good
advisory
if,
board.
Harbor advisory board, excuse me. It would be nice if we were notified of when that was going to happen so we can make sure to reach out to people that have contacted us.
So it's now, it's just so I'm clear, it's not a future agenda item, but we'll take it to Harbor Advisory Board as an update, which they may have done, although I'm looking, okay. So we'll take it to Harbor Advisory Board as an update, and there it will stay unless the council, perhaps the representative to that board, wants to bring it forward.
Yeah, or the board has a suggestion to us as far as action. I guess what I wouldn't want to see happen is there's just a silence after an event like that from the city's perspective. We need to, you know, at least make a comment.
Well, and I think maybe the fact that it was mentioned here and it was in the paper and everything, that when Carla attends that meeting, you could bring that back as part of your report, whatever it was.
I would just probably want to add on that I think maybe some of those advisory bodies should be coming forward with quarterly reports anyway. Mm-hmm. It's about time that they would start. So I, you know, that could be one of the advisory bodies that came forward mm-hmm. with their information, perhaps at the next meeting.
All right. Anything else?
Yeah.
No, is that the only thing you had?
Carla,
anything for future agenda?
No, thank you for everything.
Anything over here that you want to pawn off on the next council? Okay.
Actually, just remembered, with the medicinal marijuana ordinance, what do you expect that's going to...
It's going to heat back up. We talked to Dana today about looking at dates, so we'll start meeting again with the subcommittee. I'm assuming, you know, Noah, you'll be on that, and then the new council might pick a second person to fill the mayor's spot on it. But we'll pick it up and now finish it. The ordinance is probably 85 to 90% done, but there's a few really sticky issues on how to deal with them. How to deal with the number and picking is probably number one. So we'll pick it back up and... email will be going out to all the members to get back together and to move it forward.
Okay. So they're seeing again. Because I don't know who they came from. I'm so they're seeing. Okay, my closing comment. I've used it before. It's from Maya Angelou, but I'm going to add one thing to the end of it. People will forget what you said and what you did, but they will never forget how you made them feel. It's my hope that everyone participating in our council meetings during my term as mayor has felt respected and valued. We're adjourned.